Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and this evening broadcast is Rome and commerce versus nationality.
One of the biggest problems that people inside the United States have when it comes to their mortgage is they don't understand the backdrop of the bankruptcy of the United States and the House Joint Resolution that's already been in place for the remedy. Now, if you can understand this, the only thing that you will need is to formulate the correct documents and serve them. It's just that simple. Now, there's a series of documents that we have available for you at www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, before you do anything, call me. Let's find out where you are so we'll know how to deal with the situation. Contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then we can get you over. Once you get this information on your belt and you read it, you'll find out just how simple it is to get this thing done. What we have is a crisis inside the United States, and it comes because people don't understand what the solutions are and what the remedies are and how to take these remedies and put in place to solve the problems that they have. Go to http www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Click on the links and observe the videos. Just examine the whole page and click on the link to archives. Go over there. When you get there, contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, Morris, now we're back. We're going to be dealing with how does Rome do business in America? When does your nationality come into play? What part does your own government play? How do you operate in commerce as a Moor? Now, keep in mind, if at any time anybody have any questions, go ahead and raise your hand. We open up the line and let you state whatever it is that you have to, whatever your question is. And we will do the best we can to answer your questions. Now, first of all, I'm going to explain to you how I deal with this. Even though I know that Rome has tricked my mother into standing at the hospital and creating a birth certificate. They're trading it on the New York Stock Exchange. They're using it to claim you as their property and all of this stuff. Okay. We know that the United States of America operates under a continuous series of contracts. The whole country operates this way. Everything operates this way. You can't get married without a contract in their system. You got to have a contract. If you're calling yourself an American, and you're married, you got to have a contract with Rome. That's just bottom line. Okay, you can't die and have a funeral without contracts. It is amazing. You can't buy or sell without a contract. Everything you do involves a contract. You want insurance? Got to have a contract. You need a house? Got to have a contract. You want a driver's license? Definitely got to have a contract. You need a tag? Well, got to have a contract. If you want to go out of town and you need a job in order to get vacation to do that with, you got to have a contract. You know, your employer going to tell you, we are now officially hiring, and we are paying X amount of dollars an hour. We're paying you $10 an hour. Now, you go out, you get the job. He said, well, the job paid $10 an hour, but I need you to fill out an application. Here comes the contract. And once you fill out the application, then we're going to give you the orientation to tell you we got you on contract. You are bound by our rules and regulations. We're going to let you know how much we're going to pay you, what time you go to lunch, what time you get off from lunch, what time that you can go home for the day. We don't care nothing about nothing about what you may decide for your own self that you're going to do during these 8 hours, because we determine your life during these 8 hours. Why? Well, you signed a contract. You're on a contract. You got a contract with this company. You have allowed this company to determine how much you can spend for grocery. You have allowed this company through this contract to determine when you go to bed at night. You have allowed this company to determine what quality of food you're going to eat, how much you're going to spend for your children's education. You have signed a contract with these people. And this is how it goes in Rome. Now, Rome has what we call the United States of America Corporation, okay, masquerading as a government, okay. Prior to 1938, we had what was called common law inside the United States. After 1938, now we have public policy masquerading as law. The whole system is a corporate matrix, a corporate system. And this is how you operate in it. Now, you can say anything you want to say about what you think is wrong or what you think is right. It doesn't really matter. You got contracts. If you got contracts, then you tie it in. Now, I run into a lot of brothers and sisters, and I talk to them often over the phone, and they tell me, well, I have filed my documents, my marriage documents, and I put in my status, and I put in this, that, and the other, and I have done this, and I have done that, and I have done the other. Well, so you have done that. So now you are expecting Rome to do what? I mean, you put Rome, you file these documents down in there. You told Rome, hey, I'm not Negro, colored, and black. I'm a Moor. Here go my documents. I got it notarized. I signed it. Now, you got to treat me different. But what Rome does, Rome said, okay, well, wait a minute. Before you file these documents, let me tell you how much it's going to cost you for us to do the name change. We charging, what, $49.95 or $69.95, and then we'll put in our record that you changed your name. Okay, now you pay the money. They give you a receipt, you know, contract now. You're involved in a contract. But then Rome take the new Moorish name and put that up in all capital letters, too. So you are under the impression that because you have went down that road and told Rome you changed your name. Rome said, well, hey, no problem. We tell you how much we charge you to do it for you. It is amazing. However, we have what's called a Moorish American government. Now, that's your government. And what I done was I went over to the Moorish American Government website. That's www.moorishamericangov.org. And when I got there, I signed the census. I put my Moorish name, I put my location, all that stuff in there. And I put the name of all my relatives that I could think of in there. And then I followed up by dialing into the national conference call that's held 7 days a week. And I began to learn everything about my government. I began to interact with the government officials so that they could know me and I could know them, you see. And that is where my documentation lies with that government. Now, back over here with Rome, what I did with Rome, Rome said, well, on your birth certificate, your name says such and such thing. I said, okay, hey, no problem. That's an existing contract there. But what I'm going to do with you, Rome, is I'm going to take your same system as long as I operate inside your system by contract. I'm going to take that same system, and I'm going to use that system to my advantage. However, I'm going to do it in a way that benefits me. You understand what I'm saying? See, when you come and say, well, you owe us for this, that, and the other. I said, really? Who is it that owe you? Well, here go the name right here. Well, the name I'm looking at in all capital letters. You sure that's is that a person or is that me? And, are you further? No, I'm not. Well, this is so this is how we deal with that situation. As long as I'm operating in commerce, I'm using everything that's already existing, but I'm turning that around and using it to my advantage. When it comes to law, I'm doing the same exact thing. Now, if my human rights are violated, if the rights of indigenous people are violated, then we have a problem because I have a will on file with Rome, and in that will is one document. It's called a judicial notice and proclamation of status, along with an affidavit of identity. There's an estate letter there. There's the rights of indigenous people. There's a notice of understanding and intending claim of right. That's there. And the Declaration of Human Rights. And there's also a copy of my ID, which is a world passport, that clearly shows my estate information there. And then there's that judicial notice and proclamation of status that clearly tells them that you guys have may have made a slight oversight and characterized me as a Negro colored and black. So this is to let you know that you made a slight mistake, because I'm not. I am a Moor. And we have filed it in the record, and you signed it, and so now we all without excuse. We all know. So now if you violated my human rights, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to start what's called an administrative procedure process, but I'm also going to put my government on notice of the fact that my human rights have been violated. I'm looking for support of my government, and we're looking for government officials in order to deal with this thing. And I'm going to do everything I can to keep from bringing the weight of the government down on top of Rome. But what I will do is I will exhaust the administrative process, and I will go ahead and file a complaint so that I'll be able to put the facts on the table on the private side, not on the public side, on the private side. Then we have the trust. And all these things are in commerce. All this stuff is operates in commerce. Now, I'm trying to get the Moors to understand how to recognize the difference, because what a lot of us keep doing is we keep attempting to force Rome, a corporation, to recognize us as something other than what they have declared us to be. The way I see it is, I don't need you to recognize me as long as I'm recognizing myself. But now when you make the mistake of tampering with me, now we have a problem. Because I already know who I am. I don't have to knock on your door and say, hey, anybody home? I need you, y'all say I was a Negro. I need y'all to put something different down because I'm not a Negro. I don't need all that. I'll handle that. I'll do it. Now, in order to do these things, what you have to do is you have to learn how to play the game. So for those of you who are listening to this broadcast for the very first time, I offer free articles. One of the articles is called The Commerce Game and How to Play. Another one is called Secrets of America. Another one is called The 14th Amendment Exposed. And then we have other documents. And all you have to do is send me to Hagamana LB and email, say, Tom Seminole's articles you mentioned on your broadcast. Send that to tarhaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that right to you. That way, see, because you can't play a game until you understand the rules. Until you understand the rules, you're going to constantly be losing at the game. See, you want to learn how to play the game. You can put your fez on. You can put your Moorish attire on. You can be a sheik or whatever it is. But you have to master the game. You want to learn the game. Now, inside the United States, the commerce game is what it's all about. All of it, everything that they deal with or they do is inside this country has to do with commerce. If you don't cut on your blinker before you turn right when you in your car, the man come up behind you, he cut on his lights, he pull you over, you did not cut your blinker on before you turn right, you owe me money. You did not come to a complete stop at that red light. You owe me money. Your tail light was out. I need to see your registration, driver's license, and insurance. And if you ain't got any and all of that, you owe me money, you see. The speed limit say 30. You driving 50. You owe me money. You standing in front of somebody place of business. I need to see some ID. Well, I don't have any. You owe me money. It's all about commerce. And what they're doing is they're operating as, out here on the streets, they're operating as highwaymen to generate. They have sessions where each man out here is responsible for generating so much revenue per day doing a shift. Okay? They got to write so many tickets. They got to put so many people in jail. And all of this right here, this is business. This is how Rome do this thing, man. And I mean, it's so frustrating. You feel so trapped because you don't know what to do about it. And I ain't never been the type of person that loved to be trapped. I ain't never been that kind of person. I've always loved my freedom. I've always been. I don't know what it is about me. I just have to have that freedom. They stopped me on the streets just like they done you. They wrote me a ticket just like they done you. They used to, when I was young, I didn't know anything. They'd come and pick me up and, well, you broke the law. We're gonna put you in jail. I thought it was normal. I thought that was the way that it was supposed to be. But I'm telling you that it ain't. So now, when Rome does something, the like of which ain't never been seen. You stop a man on the street. Let me see your driver's license. I ain't got none. Well, I'm going to need you to step out of the car. I can't volunteer for abduction. Oh, sir, can I see your identification? Here's my ID right here. It clearly shows I'm occupying this state. This entire incident is recorded because I'm not going to tell you that, but it is. But then what I need from you is to tell me where the engine deposit is because you declared an emergency. If you're forcing me out of the car, I need you to take me where you're going to take me. However, if you're taking me somewhere, especially during certain hours of the day, you don't take me to a magistrate's office. Now we have a problem because we have abduction and the fact that you have a weapon on your side, we have attempted murder. And everybody inside your location that touches me are now officially liable. The county owes me money because we have abduction, we have fraud, we have attempted robbery. You understand? But when you cannot implement these things if you don't know how to do it. So once you learn how to play the game, and see now not only that, but the gentleman that fakes he is an officer, he's not. He's a private contractor. He's acting on contract. So his actions has caused the man that hired him to be out there to have a problem. And the man who hired him to be out there, that man's wife has a problem also because she is an accessory after the fact. And the man that's out there, that's the private contractor, if he has a wife, his wife is liable as an accessory after the fact. If I'm incarcerated, now we have a hostage situation. I just need to provide evidence to support my claims. The whole thing is recorded. We'll move past the local courts and go straight on up to the top because we're looking for at least $75,000 to $100,000 per violation, and we reserve the right to bring the media in so that we can make sure that everybody in America watch this particular skinning. You have to master the rules of the game. It's all in commerce. No evidence, you don't have a case. If you got evidence, you got a case. Now, when it comes to your government, the way you have a government is you, through determination and association with the members and people of your government. You want to support your government. That belongs to you. If you have a title or name in your government, that title and name is sacred. So why would you take that and give that to an enemy? I mean, we have to look at the facts in the face of facts. Truth in the face of truth. And I set up your trust. Set your living trust up on the private side. You're going to manage that trust put your assets where they belong into the trust and exercise all authority and power of that trust. But make sure that when an enemy put their hands on you, the fallout from that is horrendous, and it sends shockwaves throughout the entire state. That's exactly what happened with a gentleman called Rod Class. They stopped him on a ticket up there in he's from Carolina, and he turned in his driver's license. The same man said, "Well, I'm going to have to write you a ticket anyway." He said, you can't do that, man. You are breaking the law." So he ignored that and just wrote him the ticket. But see, this man didn't roll over. He didn't lay down for it. He went to work. He did the research. He went to studying the law, their codes, their statutes, and their ordinances. He put it together and he brought it before them. The state of Carolina had a serious problem. We had judges, lawyers, police, sheriffs, the whole house was turned upside down and turned inside out, messing with this man because he had mastered the rules of the game. And he's still rolling. Cops ran across the street to tell the judges, "Man, this man said we ain't even police. We're not officers of the law." He said, "You ain't. And you better get everything out your name because he's going to sue you for everything you got." Because he's already rolled him, and he's still rolling him. But when you study the commerce game, study what Rome got going. Take his laws. We got lawyers. They are attorneys who don't know jack about law. Now, they know about public policy, and that's what's going on inside the United States. And we're under the impression, a lot of us are under the impression, that public policy is law. It's not. They're making up stuff that they go along. They come up with all kind of stuff, but you don't never argue with them when you know the rules of the game and you know how to play the game. You are confident because you know what you gonna do when they roll you. There's a serious problem. It's gonna rain. So you build your confidence by studying and mastering the rules of the game. Once you study and you learn, then you are confident. You don't have these fears, what's going to happen? Lord, they go to police. Man, I don't live like that. I don't live like that. You ain't living.
Hey, Morris, listen up. For those of you who've been contacted by the Internal Revenue Service, they call you by phone or by letter. There is a way to deal with the Internal Revenue Service, and I call it dealing with them prior to ever having to go to court. What you want to do is you want to put them in a situation where they are forced to deal with you from a position of law. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Click on the link to hawkerarchives.org and go right over there to get rid of the Internal Revenue Service package. As soon as you get there, give me a call to Hawker Amana L. Bay, area code 904-303-9061, and please call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay. Now, I don't know. Sometimes I guess I've been an odd child coming up, because I've always been the same way. Always. I've always, you can call it what you want to call it. I remember one day I was outside playing with a little boy named Ricky. Ricky crossed the street, took a rock and threw the rock and hit me upside my head. And it broke my skin. and the blood began to run down my face, and Ricky ran in the house. And I went in the house, and my mama said, "Boy, you bleeding. What happened to you?" I said, "Nothing." She said, "You got knives out here. What happened?" I said, "Ain't nothing happened." I said, "Well, come on here, let me get this stuff." And she got me bandaged up and stuff. I went to the screen door, and I stood there in that door. I stood there for hours and hours and hours. I went back outside. Ricky didn't never come back outside. And she was watching me. She watched me a long time. Then she went. She told me, "I'll be right back." She goes around the corner, and the next thing I know, here come my uncles. And I didn't want to see them. But they go over there to Ricky's house and go in the house, and they come out. They bring Ricky out, put Ricky in the car, and take Ricky away. And I never seen Ricky again. Ever again. Never seen him again. And I asked my mama, I said, "Mama, why they went over there and got him?" She said, "I don't know." She said, "You won't tell me nothing, I'm not going to tell you nothing. Until you tell me something, I'm not going to tell you nothing." And I ain't tell her nothing, she ain't tell me nothing. And it's been that way ever since 1961. I've been looking for Ricky. I can't find Ricky. anyway, what I'm trying to tell you, you gotta stop these people from rolling you, man. When they roll you, you gotta stop them. There was a gentleman called Charlie Sprinkle. Told the man, say, "I don't have a driver's license." He said, "Well, I'm going to have to write you a ticket." He said, "Well, you can write the ticket, but if you do, me and you going to be joined at the hip for the rest of our natural life." And he wrote him a ticket. He sent Ronald Reagan a letter and told him the man wrote him a ticket. He needed him to dismiss his ticket because he wasn't driving, he was traveling. Because the only man or woman that need a driver's license is somebody being paid to drive. If you don't have somebody paying you to drive, you do not need a driver's license. If you're not operating a school bus, if you're not operating a city bus, if you're not operating a taxi cab, if you're not driving a handicapped vehicle, whatever vehicle or tractor trailer or whatever it is somebody paying you, those are the people that need a license to drive. If you don't have that, if you're working for a daycare, if you're working for Walmart, and you are a regular employee at Walmart, and you're not driving trucks for Walmart, you do not need anybody's permission to exercise your freedom of rights to travel. And when somebody tamper with you, you should be joined to the hip with them for the duration. So Ronald Reagan, he's in a letter back. He said, "Well, you broke the law. You got it. You need a driver's license. You got to pay the ticket." So he used that letter as evidence because Ronald Reagan was his dumb behind. He signed it. And so he filed suit against him and their wives. Called Nancy Reagan coming out there, banging out of the limousine. Gave her a lawsuit paper. She was mad, boy. Then he come to town, and he goes in there with the judge. "So, judge, I need to talk to you in a minute. You know, he's a big celebrity. He's governor of the state and all that." And he say, "This guy, he's just a little machine operator. You know, he's one but 20-something years old." He say, "You know, this ain't nothing, man. Just going on and throw this thing out. Judge say I ain't going to be able to do it." He said, he go to letter he sent right there and your signature on it. That's contract. Say, "You signed the contract." Say, "I can't do it. Can't throw it out." So you're going to have to defend yourself. So when they get inside the courtroom, they discover ain't nothing they can do with Springer. Springer laid the law down. He go all the Supreme Court rulings right here saying I have exercised my right to travel. This man broke the law, and the governor of the state backed him up. He's taking his wages under false pretense. It's called fraud. And it's more than one, so now we have conspiracy. You see. Now, if you're washing your dishes and you don't have a dry towel and you need to dry your dishes with the same rag you're washing, wring that rag out until it get dry. And that's what he did with them. It got to the point where they came to him and said, well, Mr. Sprinkle, can you could you just drop the lawsuit against the wives as accessories after the fact? He said, I ain't going to be able to do it, partner. They couldn't get it thrown out of the coast. They couldn't do nothing with it. Finally, they sent the Secret Service to his house. They said, Mr. Sprinkle, if you drop the lawsuit, we'll give you the run of the road. So you'll never be stopped again. We just need you to let the governor get his you-know-what out the wringer. He said, I'll take it under advisement. So he went and got his spoke car, headed down the highway, blew past a state trooper doing almost 100 miles an hour, blowing his horn to make sure he see him. Sure enough, he got behind him, pull him over. He said, you know what you're doing? He said, yeah, probably about 100 miles an hour. He said, you got a driving license? He said, no, I don't. He said, what's your name? He said, my name's Charlie Sprinkle. He said, oh, I'm sorry, sir. I just stopped to see if you needed any assistance. He said, no, I think I can handle it on my own. So he pulled off and left him in a cloud of dust. Went on back to the house. He said, he dropped the lawsuit. He said, but if they start anything else later on down the road, say he can reactivate it for $25. You see, you have to learn how to operate in commerce and try how to handle yourself. These people, it's all about the money. If somebody gives you a contract to sign, and it's a contract that you did not create, 9 times out of 10, that contract, the person that wrote that contract or created that contract, stands to benefit from that contract. So you have to examine the contract and learn how to create your own contracts. So one of the most important things to master is the administrative process. That is the process that I use in dealing with mortgage companies, if I'm going to deal with a bank, if I'm going to deal with a law firm, if I'm going to deal with the sheriff's department, if I'm going to deal with the governor, if I'm going to deal with anybody. I'm going to use that process no matter what kind of way that I take to use it. I'm going to use that process. Because when I use that process, now I officially got documentation that clearly shows that I have went to my brother in an attempt to solve the matter prior to going to any courtroom. I exhausted every remedy that I have, every attempt that I have at my disposal to settle the matter. And through this particular documentation, I have evidence that I done just that, because I know that no evidence, no case. And I want to always bring a notary in as a witness. And he carries the power of the Secretary of State. I want his signature, I want his stamp, and all of that good stuff on these documents so that I can use these and march them all the way uptown to the Supreme Court if I have to. And all of this occurs in commerce in Rome. Now, if I got a human rights violation, or my right as an indigenous person is violated, now I have documentation to clearly show, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that I, a man of African descent, Moorish nationality, am absolutely indigenous and have been on this landmass prior to anybody that you claim had been there. I can provide you proof. And you can see if you can dispute this proof if you want. And if you need to go out to the scene of the crime, now they got a thing where judges and jury, they can actually go out to the scene. So I would love to get them all on the boat and take them out 40 miles off the coast of Florida and show them a pyramid inside the Atlantic Ocean, 400 foot high, that my ancestors built thousands of years before there was a Christopher Columbus and before you ever lied about somebody called an Indian being in America as a native. So you can see the evidence for yourself. In many other places, all over America. Then we can take the the document that the UN had declared the people in Louisiana as the oldest people on earth that predates the dynasties of ancient Kemet, right here in Louisiana. So there's no doubt about that. That's, you know, that's all that to me is elementary. I don't need to force that down Rome's throat. I don't need to run into a courtroom. Well, I'm, you know, I'm standing on my square. I'm my nationality. I'm not a Negro. I got a here's my nationality card. I belong to the temple. all of that. I don't do none of that. I don't do none of that. I don't have to. Now I take wrong stick and you use wrong stick. And it doesn't have anything to do with racism. Let's take a look at something. I want you all to sit tight. And when we come back, we're going to open up the line. If anybody got any questions or comments, I'm going to open up the line so that you can get in. Okay? Hold on.
Dinesh D'Souza, you have written the End of Racism. I know, we'll get into in much detail what you have to say here. But I mean, you start from really almost turning a lot of the liberal analysis of racism on its ear by claiming that racist society as we've known it historically and a lot of the defenses the black community has put up against a racist society are out of date, outmoded, that they're no longer needed. Give me a little bit more insight into that background.
Look, there are three possible reasons why groups can differ. The first is genes or genetic differences. The second is culture. And the third is discrimination,
right?
It's external
barriers,
legacy.
Right.
I reject both the liberal view, which holds that black failure is largely or mainly due to discrimination, and I reject the view that it's genetic. So I focus on cultural differences. And I point out, for example, that in virtually every measure of academic achievement or economic performance, we find not just whites, but immigrants, Cubans, West Indians, Koreans, leapfrogging ahead of American blacks and claiming the fruits of the American dream. I think that this is because blacks have developed a culture that represents an adaptation to historical circumstances, but one that is today in some respects a liability or dysfunctional.
Well, it's interesting because not only have you kind of turned a lot of the liberal arguments that the impediments to black society are externally set up by the white community, but you go further and say that this should be kind of an uplifting analysis for the black community because it says genetically you're not stuck and that you shouldn't be so fatalistic to believe that the only way your lot in life is going to improve is when white society improves their attitude. Yet is it being received as an uplifting message by the black community?
Well, Thomas Sowell, the black writer, says of this book that The End of Racism is a heartbreaking book because the truth is heartbreaking. It is a tough book, as I say, and yet it's a hopeful book because if our problems are in our genes, we can't do anything about
right.
them. And if the problems of blacks are due to white racism, I don't know of any way, even if we could magically get rid of white racism overnight, this would do nothing to increase black test scores, improve black savings rates or black rates of business formation, or strengthen black families, or reduce black-on-black crime. Those are the most serious problems facing blacks. Now, for a generation, people have said you cannot point at these problems because to do so is blaming the victim.
Right.
When Daniel Patrick Moynihan wrote his report on the black family in the 60s, the illegitimacy rate for blacks was 25%. He said it was a national tragedy, and people said, you're a racist. Stop talking about it. And he did. He hasn't said a word about it since. The illegitimacy rate for blacks in the United States today is close to 70%. So when these problems are ignored, they metastasize, they become far worse. On the other hand, if they are recognized and acknowledged, I'm confident that they can be addressed.
What caused that pathology or that culture that you document and itemize as this, what you see as the source problem?
Well, first of all, it's not solely caused by poverty. One of the contributions of the book is it disputes the so-called culture of poverty analysis that goes back to the 60s. I point out, for example, that Asians and whites who come from poor families making less than $20,000 a year score higher on tests of academic achievement than blacks who come from families earning over $60,000 a year. I point out that poor blacks have a much higher illegitimacy rate than poor whites, for example, and so on. I think one of the reasons for this is that blacks have had a unique experience in the United States, differing from that of immigrants. And it's not surprising that as a result of that experience, blacks have developed a culture, a set of attitudes, values, behaviors that are formed out of the crucible of that experience. For example, I point out that while Americans have traditionally been hostile to the federal government, viewing it as the enemy of rights.
Mm-hmm.
For blacks, the federal government has been a deliverer of rights, a provider of rights. It was the federal government that ended both slavery and segregation and played a crucial role in employing a lot of blacks in this century. It was the main force behind affirmative action, for example. Many blacks owe their middle-class status to the government. So it's not surprising that blacks have a cultural orientation that looks at government sympathetically. You know, we have recently this million-man march on Washington. Blacks always marching on Washington, looking to the government for answers. Meanwhile, other groups are setting up entrepreneurial associations, rotating credit systems, and within a generation, their daughters are valedictorians and they have moved to the suburbs. I think that we need to realize that the government is today not in a very good position to address these problems. It doesn't have the resources, and public confidence in the government is at an all-time low.
When you talk about this culture or the pathology of the black community, I mean, reliance on government, the normalization of illegitimacy, the worship of the outlaw hero, and see these as kind of the negative attributes that, in fact, are keeping the black community back, I mean, others have pointed those same attributes as almost kind of the evidence of the authenticity of black culture, saying that if you can't compete with white society, you have to have some esteem, and that this, in fact, is, we shouldn't be measuring black culture against white culture yardsticks, I guess.
Well, that's the legacy of cultural relativism, which is the main target of my book, which says, in effect, that all cultures are equal and no culture can judge another by its own standard, and culture should not impose their values on each other.
Mm-hmm.
I argue that this relativism played an important historic role. It helped to undermine the old racism, which was based on the notion of a hierarchy. The old racists basically said that you have savages, you have barbarians, and you have civilization, and we whites are the only people capable of civilization.
Right.
Relativism was a way to undermine that racist totem pole, but it's created a new problem because it now makes it difficult to recognize that black culture is in some respects inferior to white culture, at least functionally inferior to achieve those ingredients of success that blacks and whites both want. And so what we need is a project of cultural restoration that is aimed at improving study habits, strengthening families. I think the three institutions that need to be strengthened are the church, the family, and the small business. Those are the key to any restoration in the inner cities of the United States.
There has been, though, in recent years, a growth of a black middle class. And so there has been advancements that have been made. There's no question there's a disparity between that growth of the middle class and what appears to be a permanent underclass. But why are some of the members of the black community moving forward while others clearly aren't?
Well, it's one of the great ironies of desegregation and affirmative action. People forget that segregation subsidized the ghetto in a weird way, because segregation essentially guaranteed that a black lawyer, a black doctor, a black school teacher, a black drug dealer, and a black pimp all lived on the same street. And so with the middle class being forced to live in the inner city, you had a semblance of middle class norms,
mm-hmm.
even amid segregation. What's happened now is because of opportunities and because of racial preferences and so on, middle class blacks, those with skills and resources, have left. So white flight in the 70s has been followed by black flight. And middle-class blacks have taken with them valuable economic and cultural resources. So we have a seesaw effect. The middle class has gone up, and the underclass has gone down. The conditions of the underclass have become worse in the past 25 years. And it is that is now the most serious challenge for public policy and for American culture.
Now, you reject the notion that American society is systemically racist, but you do say that we practice, which you've introduced a term, which is interesting, rational discrimination. That is, that we do discriminate, but that there is a certain rationalism to the way we discriminate. And I think one of the examples that's used all the time is the cab driver who might be driving past a black youth in urban America will not pick them up because their experience is that a black youth is five times more likely to commit violent crime than a white youth. But that analysis, what does that do for the black youth who is law-abiding and isn't part of that underclass who gets passed by the cab driver?
That's a very good question. And I think our debate on this kind of subject is terribly polarized and irrational now, because what happens, in effect, is that black activists say the cab driver is a bigot. Even if it happens to be a Lebanese cab driver or a West Indian or a Nigerian or a black cab driver acting no differently than a white cab driver, they say, well, he's just internalized white racism. So the cab driver is presumed to be a bigot, and the cab driver presumes that the black activist is just crazy because he cannot understand that all the cab driver is trying to do is get home to his wife and family. The concept of rational discrimination allows us to say that we have a distinction to be made between rationality and morality. The cab driver is acting rationally. He is trying to protect his property and security. And the law-abiding young black who's passed up by a cab is appealing to morality. What he's saying is, I have a right to be treated as an individual based on the content of my character, to which the cab driver responds, I would love to do that, but frankly, I'm not in a position to get to know my customers personally. If I could ask you about your family, about your crime rate, about whether you have a criminal record and so on, it would be one thing. So we have a tragedy, and I think what we have to do is ask whether the law-abiding African-American's right not to be inconvenienced, right to get a cab is more important, or the cab driver's right to protect his life and his cab. And I think that in this case, it is the cab driver's right that is more important.
So you go a step further. You say that rather than focusing on the cab driver as a bigot, what this law-abiding black youth who can't get the cab ride, or in fact gets stopped unduly by the police because they have that same kind of socialization, that same experience of dealing with black violence, black crime, what he should be doing is blaming his black brethren, who is a criminal, and that
or if not blaming, at least recognizing that is the source of the problem. Look, immigrant groups have always said, for example, Italian communities living in New York would always be exceptionally angry if the grandson Vito was caught stealing or was caught involved in some crime, because they would say, look, you are giving the Italian community a bad name. In other words, you are making us all look like we are part of the mafia or part of organized crime, and we will be especially severe on you. There is absolutely no such accountability, at least on no systematic level, in the black community. That the reason that the cab driver is acting this way is because the Sentencing Commission, a liberal advocacy group, recently released a study. 1 in 3 African Americans in the United States is on any given day in prison, on parole, or on probation. These are staggeringly high crime rates. And the point is, by changing those patterns of behavior, we make rational discrimination less likely. I argue that that's the best anti-racism now.
But, and in doing this, I mean, you also kind of excoriate a lot of the black leadership. You call them race merchants, the notion that they profit, they exist by virtue of having an underclass.
Well, I say that they recognize that the scandalous sufferings of the underclass provide the political capital that justifies transfer payments to the middle class. In other words, right now, for example, there are programs that mainly benefit middle class blacks, in which the government provides set-asides, discounts in buying radio stations, preferences to get into Princeton, and so on. Believe me, there are no blacks from the very few blacks from the ghetto going to Princeton. It's the sons and daughters of Jesse Jackson, of government workers, of Hispanic doctors, and so on. So the point is this: if somehow the ghetto disappeared overnight, if it could somehow end, isn't it true that Americans would immediately begin to say, well, why is Jesse Jackson's kids, who have every advantage in life, getting a preference to go to Berkeley or getting a government contract? The political capital that supports these preferences would disappear. So there is a weird dependency. It's not that the underclass is dependent on the civil rights establishment, it's the other way around.
But that says a terrible thing about the motivation of a lot of these things. I mean, you can't truly believe that Jesse Jackson wouldn't be absolutely delighted in the eradication of poverty or
racism. Oh, absolutely.
He's not doing this so his kids can go to Princeton.
No. I'm not saying that, but I think there's a sophisticated form of economic and political analysis that recognizes now that institutions develop vested interests. For example, the civil rights movement has an institutional interest in blaming racism for black problems and in not paying much attention to the most tragic sufferings of the underclass. And therefore, if you look at a group like the NAACP, it's much more concerned about finding out that there are people who go to Denny's who can't get a meal, and much less concerned, for example, with programs to strengthen black families.
Now, you've obviously provided, some intellectual depth to a relatively conservative argument. And as a consequence of, the power of your intellectual argument, I mean, you're taking seriously whether people agree with you or not. I mean, do you worry, however, that some of the arguments that you put forward provide refuge for the true racist? I mean, there's some stuff in here that if I was David Duke, I'd be going, oh boy, now I've got a really, really good intellectual foundation for my otherwise, creepy and repugnant views.
This is what I call the sleeping with the enemy problem, that people that there's a sense that you should not make legitimate arguments because illegitimate use may be made
right.
of them. I think that the opposite is true, that the public taboo surrounding race, the fact that people cannot speak what's on their mind. When I often speak on campus, as young people will come up to me and they say, well, much of what you say makes sense, but I'm white. I could never say that. I would be hounded off the podium.
Well, you talk about your own ethnic immunity.
That's right.
That by virtue of coming from Bombay, you can say things that a white
Absolutely.
Guy couldn't say.
And I'm trying to use that immunity to widen the parameters of debate in the right tone, because I believe that when these topics are not addressed, then the Dukes and the Farrakhans of this world are strengthened, because they say, in effect, we are speaking to the secret, suppressed longings of people. The mainstream politicians won't touch the issue. So there's been a racial polarization in which people on the right and on the left have been strengthened by this kind of radicalization. I think that when these issues are aired, are candidly discussed, that the effect will be to come up with more sensible policies.
Now, it'd be no surprise that liberals would not embrace your analysis or your book. But you've had surprisingly little support from the conservative black community. In fact, I think some of your former colleagues have resigned from the American Enterprise Institute, which you're part, and said some terrible things, the Mark Furman of public policy. Why aren't you getting more support from the conservative elements of the community?
Well, two black conservatives have criticized me quite harshly, and one of them, I think, in a rather ill-considered moment that he, I think, has regretted, said that. That's the example of the kind of poisonous rhetoric, I think, that prevents the debate from moving forward. But other black conservatives, including Thomas Sowell, many others have rushed to my defense. So there are two sides of this. And I also point out that there are many liberal scholars, African-American scholars, ahead of the NAACP, ahead of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, who have praised the book. So the book is getting a very unexpected reception across the spectrum.
Well, you do them more than simply analysis. I mean, you're prescriptive at the end. And you talk about the fourth option, an option that hasn't been explored yet, where we should have governments who are race neutral, but we should allow the private sector to discriminate, to be free to discriminate. And you justify this, that this in fact will help black people. Again, help me with that particular topic.
Well, actually, I didn't begin the book thinking that,
mm-hmm.
and yet then I discovered that ethnic groups in the United States have always succeeded by helping their own guys. Ethnocentrism in that sense is good when it is harnessed for gain. So if you look at the Italians, you look at the Jews, you look at what the Koreans are doing now. You go to a Korean grocery store in Washington, D.C., and you peek in the back, 15 other Koreans. It's one way that immigrant groups have overcome their historic obstacles, lack of not speaking the language, for example.
This Korean grocery store owner is functionally practicing discrimination. He's
discriminating in favor of his own, and I think that that's good.
But, I mean, that's happening already. You're not seeing any people saying that, you know, the real problem with American society is that black businessmen are hiring too many white people.
No. See, what we have now is a double standard in which discrimination on the part of minorities is okay, but
right.
discrimination on the part of whites is not. The Republicans have talked about the race-neutral society, colorblindness. Well, the problem with colorblindness is because blacks are not competitive with other groups. If you strictly enforce colorblindness in the public sector and the private sector, there would be almost no blacks at MIT. Blacks would begin to vanish from many selective professions. The irony of legalizing private discrimination is I am quite confident that there would be far more discrimination in favor of blacks than against blacks. Virtually every public company today, IBM, AT&T, Procter & Gamble, discriminates in favor of blacks, and that would continue, and I think it's okay. It should continue.
You don't think that discrimination is a function of the kind of the government sanction that says affirmative action is good?
Not anymore. It used to be. But what's happened is that these companies and these universities have set up affirmative action sectors within their companies so that even if the government were to step back, I think many of these policies would continue. In fact, when I was a member of the Reagan administration, the government had talked about ending racial preferences, and there was an outcry, and many heads of companies said, oh, no, don't do that, or if you do that, we will continue to do what we're doing. Affirmative action has, in that sense, become a way of life. I'm worried that if we outlaw affirmative action, a great deal of government intrusion would be required to go to private companies and force them, don't act this way, don't hire this guy, hire this guy instead, almost on the same scale as was required a generation ago to uproot the old discrimination.
You have no concerns that we might revert back to the old Jim Crow status where I'm a restaurant owner and I just say, well, then no black people are going to eat here.
Well, remember that the restaurant owners did that in part because the prejudices against blacks eating alongside whites in restaurants were so severe that many restaurant owners, in effect, claimed racial discrimination. They said, we don't have anything against blacks, but none of our customers would come. Well, this is this is one way in which the world has changed. And moreover, the law in the United States basically says if you have a restaurant or a motel and you put up a sign open to the public, you are a quasi-public institution, so you are held to different standards than, say, a private company.
What do you say to the well-meaning critics who say, you know, you have opened up a debate that has been too long muted or one-sided? I mean, in fact, there are serious problems with affirmative action and the preferential treatment system that we have put forward. But in doing it the way you've done it, you inflame the argument further. You make black people crazy. You make black people say horrible things about you. You give ammunition to white racists who otherwise would be left to their anti-intellectualism.
I think the opposite is true. I think this is a subject on which many normally sensible people lose their reason. And so, for example, you have a Washington Post reviewer of my book say, D'Souza promotes theories of genetic superiority, even though I explicitly say the opposite. Or you will have people say, well, he says that slavery is a racist institution, !! As though this settles the matter. I make an effort in this book to address questions in a sober, in a scholarly tone, beginning with assumptions, then raising questions, then looking at evidence. Then a lot of interviews, I talk to black scholars, white scholars. I have a range of opinion in the book. So I think the book is exactly the kind of sober investigation that is provocative intellectually, because it takes things people, quote, know to be so, and says, is that really true?
Mm-hmm.
That's bound to generate a certain degree of angst and a certain degree of outrage. But I think that the dust will settle on it, and when people dispassionately view it, they will see that a lot of good has been achieved. So the book is a form of shock treatment.
I've been asked over and over by a lot of people about the exercising your freedom of rights to travel. And that is something that I have done. I've done it quite well, and I do it today. However, it is something that you have to understand. First of all, there are things that you need to know in order to have the confidence to get out there on that pavement and defend yourself and be able to do this thing successfully. This information is contained in Tucker's archives. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and once you look over that page, click on TuckerArchives.org. Go over there, and you'll see Tucker's Archives Master Library, where the audio, video, the documentation, and everything else that you would need is right there available for you in order for you to exercise your freedom of rights to travel. That saves you a ton of money. That saves you jail. That keeps you from having to have a driver's license, tag, registration, and all that kind of stuff. www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061. Try to call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Now, I want to lay out for you, before we go back into dealing with your own government and getting to know your government to the point your government personally knows you based on your interaction with your government, I want to talk to you about how to exercise your freedom of rights to travel. Okay, first of all, it doesn't have anything to do with you being a Moor. Let's get that part straight first. These are rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court that's already been put down, and more importantly, over and above the fact that they ruled on it, is the fact that we have evidence of the actual cases. Okay, so we'll take those and we'll formulate the documentation that we need. Now, what I use is I use identification that clearly shows, and it was a World Citizen Passport, which does not give me the freedom or right to travel. But what it clearly has my name spelled in upper lowercase letters as a man. There is no address, so I'm not a resident, you see. Jacksonville Territory, Florida Republic. And on the page 6, I had them install my estate information that clearly shows that I'm outside of U.S. corporate jurisdiction. So now that we got that part understood, now, based on what I know about the Supreme Court rulings, what I'm able to formulate in documentation and what I know about who to get when there's a problem. How to put the documentation together, how to serve them, how to send it, how to mail it, how to get it stamped, signed, notarized, what color ink to use, everything that I need to know is there. How to implement this and make it public knowledge downtown among the private contractors and the sheriff that they clearly know that this man insists on exercising the freedom right to travel. Anybody that interferes with that has consequences to pay, and very, very serious consequences. And we're talking about heavy financial penalties. And, you got to go to court. And you got to respond by affidavit. And, you're in violation of trust law and all of these things. So the best thing to do, if I were them, is to simply take this guy. We know who he is. We know where he at. We know the what he's got on his vehicle. We know what we're going to run into anytime we try to roll this guy. So the best thing to do is leave him alone. Just leave him alone. And that's exactly what they did and what they still do. So it all boils down to understanding the rules of the game. Once you understand the rules of the game, then you can play the game successfully. Now, when it comes to a mortgage company, we want to learn the rules of the game involving that so that you can deal with that successfully. Most of us under the impression that a mortgage is illegal. No, it ain't. All this thing, see, first of all, let's just use common sense for a moment. And this doesn't have anything to do with prejudice or racism or any of that. Let's just look at the fact, butt naked fact. Okay, it was threatening to rain. It was kind of looking cloudy. So last night, I cut on the television, which is very, very rare, and to check the weather. But before they brought on the weather, they had this thing on about Australia. And they showed a diagram where Australia is on fire. I mean, based on the diagram that I've seen, it appears that the entire landmass is on fire. On the east, west, north, south, the interior, and they're fighting desperately to put out the fire. Now, who's doing this? It's not the original people of the land. It is people who invaded the land, murdered, maimed, and killed the rightful owners of the land, and call themselves Australians. These people came there from Europe, dispelled from Europe, as criminals. The people that came to America didn't come here to set up a holy religious anything. These people were looking for somewhere to live and something to eat. They killed the people of the land when they got here. They murdered the Africans. They murdered the children of the Africans that they labeled as Indians. They murdered and maimed and killed. Now, we're talking about after the murders, not to mention the over 200 million murders during the slave Holocaust. We ain't got to mention those murders. But now, what makes you think there's something legitimate about any system that they can create? What makes you think there's anything holy are righteous about any system that they can put into play. We have the same criminal elements. We murder, we maim, we got so many prisons, we got so many prisons inside the United States that is unreal. And the majority of the population inside these institutions are people of African descent. So my question is, again, what makes you think there's anything holy or righteous or legitimate about anything or any kind of institution that's been put in place? We find corruption in the steel industry. We find corruption in the automobile industry. We find corruption in the housing industry. We find corruption in the educational industry. We find corruption in the religious institutions. Every institution in America created by the same people, we find corruption. You may not see it on the media surface. And people don't want to talk about right and wrong. We want to act as if after the murders, there's we need to look at God, and you know, God said such as after the murder. I had someone come out and stole the gate off my fence. I know who did it. Was the man next door that did it, a Caucasian gentleman. I called the police to make sure there's a record down there. You know, I just want y'all to have a record over there, because I'm going to deal with it myself, but I just want you to understand what's about to happen in America. And a Caucasian cop came in and he said, well, you have any idea who might do it? I said, I know exactly who did it. I said, he did it next door. He said, well, first of all, you know, God said that vengeance is his. And then I said, oh, yeah. I said, I understand what you're saying. I said, but God ain't here right now. I am. I said, I appreciate you coming out. And if you write up your report, go ahead and take it on downtown. I appreciate you for coming on out. Well, now you need to, first of all, you need to think about what I said about the Lord. I said, you mean after the murders of 200 million of my people? Well, this ain't got nothing to do with racism. I said, well, I can't be a racist. What about you? Well, look, I'm ready to go. I said, okay, I'll see you later. Area code 267. Tell us who you are, where you calling from, what's your question and comment.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Sure I can. Who am I speaking to?
Okay, Rose. I'm actually traveling,
hey,
so
Rose.
There's a lot of noise in the... How you doing, Zaharka? It's a lot of noise in the background. But I just needed you to say a couple things a little bit slower, or correct me if I'm wrong. I have the phone number as 904-303-9061. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yes, sir. And the next thing I have that I need to get clear about, did you say newfreehealth.com? Is that correct?
No. www.newfreehealthgroup.com.
What was the other word before the .com?
Group.
I still didn't get it because of the air conditioning on the bus.
Okay, GROUP, group, the word group, newfreehealthgroup. Yeah,
group.com. Okay, and then you have a website as well? Or
that's the website.
Okay, and so if I wanted to go back in the archive, what would I put in to the computer?
Well, when you get to newfreehealthgroup.com, you'll see a link there that says TahakaArchives.org. And once you go over there, you'll see Tahaka Archives Master Library. You'll see that right there, TahakaArchives.org. The link is right there on the newfreehealthgroup.com.
Okay, yes, because I heard you on Yousef's show, and I'm so glad to be on this call this evening. Thank you so much for putting out the information that you're sharing. And I yield the floor.
All right.
Islam.
Islam, sister. Area code 850. 850. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, which question or comment.
Islamo.
Islamo, what's going on?
This is Brother Bay from Panama City Territory.
Okay, man. Let me have it, Bay.
Okay. I've been talking to you, you know, off and on, but can you tell me how far back does the administrative remedies reach?
How
That's
far
what I'm trying
back? Now, I got to understand your question. Now, you're talking about how far back does it reach. Do you mean how do we do it and what is the – how do we do the whole process? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes, sir. Exactly.
Okay. All right. This is the way it goes. All right. Now, we understand, we already know that we operating on a continuum series of contracts, everything done on contract. We'll say that you get a the policeman writes you a ticket. Okay, there's no argument. So what I'll do with that is I'll take and put a little X on it, all rights reserved or whatever, and he'll give me my copy and he'll get his copy. And then as soon as I get home, I'll take it and write diagonally, calls it refusal contract, or no contract, all rights reserved, UCC-1, what have you. And then I will draw up an affidavit. Now, the affidavit is aimed at his boss, you see, because he's working for another man, so therefore that other man is responsible for his behavior out there on the streets because I'm not driving. He's declared an emergency, which is a felony. There's no injured party. And at the same time, he's asking me to contract with him with documentation that belonged to the state. So I didn't give him none of that, you see. So now he's in violation of breaking all of these rulings by the Supreme Court. So what I'll do up the affidavit, give him 30 days to answer each one of these points to prove that each one of these points is a lie. And let him know how much damages I'm seeking. Because I'm going to do it in the local courts first, so I'm asking for $4,000 per point on that affidavit. And I'm getting 30 days to respond. And it's addressed to the sheriff, and I'm also including the man's name, his card number, and his badge number if I can get that. If I can't get that, I'm going to ask him if it would be kind enough if I copy your tag number down because I'm going to need it for my records. Now, at the same time, my dash cam going. The phone recording is going. The recordings in the doors are going. The back windshield cam is going. Recording this information down on the record as evidence. Okay, so we serve that to the sheriff, and we've uploaded this information to the computer, the evidence to the computer. We download it on DVD disc, and it matches all the law-breaking. We just need them to pay us. Now, if he does not respond in 30 days, next thing we're going to do is we're going to send him a notice of default with opportunity to cure, giving him an additional 7 days to respond, making mention of the fact that we've already sent you an affidavit. We've made every effort that we could to settle this matter informally. If he doesn't respond in those 7 days, then we're going to send a notice of default with dishonor, giving an additional 3 days, 3 to 5 days. And if he doesn't respond to that, then we are filing a complaint into the court record. We're going to take all the evidence and copies of all the evidence, and we're also going to take the administrative portion of our will, attach that to that complaint, and file it into the court record for the court to review this information and let us know when we go into court. Now, if he doesn't go up to court, we're going to ask the judge to issue a capias for his arrest. You understand? And if the judge is saying, well, we're going to have to rule against you, no problem, judge, we just appeal to the high court. And we just keep marching until we get all up, get on up the road a little bit, and sooner or later, he's going to either go to jail or he's going to have to show up, one of the two.
Okay, so
we're gonna pay.
Right, either way it goes, he's gonna pay. But like you, the administrative will and the trust needs to be in place first, right?
Well, you want to get your will on file down there, and always, you know, because I have to deal with my people based on what they can do at the time they're trying to do this thing. Get your will and go ahead and file it down there, and then go ahead on. You can set up your living trust, put all your assets in your trust, get to managing your trust, learn everything you can about trust law. You see, but what we're talking about now, we're talking about exhausting the administrative process, but you want to have things already in place, and all of this is in commerce, you see.
Right.
It's
so
in commerce.
Like you said, Brother Hawkins, make sure that will is on file first, though, right?
You want to go ahead, and even if you don't have will on file, you can still do the administrative process. But what I'm trying to tell you is, see, we got a bad habit of thinking that when it's time for war, now it's time to make ammunition. No, you make ammunition in peacetime. So right now, what everybody need to be doing right now, go over to newfreehelpgroup.com, access to our archives, start doing your will, get it on the record. Stop protecting yourself. Stop protecting your children. You got your estate letter that's a part of the administrative portion of that will. Your children are listed as property of the estate. You are the primary executor or executrix of that estate.
Okay.
So when child services come and they, well, we're going to have to take your children. Well, are you sure about that?
Right.
Well, we got law enforcement out here. We taking the children. Okay, well, hey, I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
And then they got to explain how they violated the property of the estate. We need you abducted my children. I need you to give me $200,000. Here's a document right here. Here's the evidence right here. We got witnesses supporting the evidence that I'm providing that's willing to testify, that clearly will testify to the fact that you actually came to this location and took property of the estate. We got you on video doing it.
Okay. Okay. Okay, Mo.
Fun drive. All right.
Okay.
Got another question?
No, sir. That's it.
Area code 323. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, which question or comment.
323.
Tiger? Yeah, man. It's me. Let me have it.
Peace to the God. What's going on, brother? My name is Bakari. I'm calling from the Inglewood, California area. I just wanted to know, you can create the contract to take yourself out of their jurisdiction so far as being a dead legal fiction, right? And is that the same as correct?
You can do that. Everything, the advantage that we have and what I'm trying to get everybody to understand, you can formulate your own contracts. You can study law and create a contract, and it's to your advantage to create your own contract. And if you didn't write the contract, don't sign it. So
if I didn't write the contract, I don't have to obligate myself. Okay.
No. See, any contract you get from somebody else, read it. And if it's not beneficial to you, then you need to rebut that contract and say, well, look, I looked over the terms for this credit card, and it's fantastic. However, I don't think that no one should be able to pay 13% interest. However, I am willing, if you want to keep me as a customer, to pay you 6% interest. Sign it, get a notarized, send it to a certified mail with fair receipt. That's your contract.
Okay. Because I'm just trying to wrap my.
The problem that we're having is we don't read contracts.
No, we don't, and I really don't think some of our people understand the severity of the contract and how we've obligated ourselves to this contract that we didn't know that our parents signed once we signed the birth certificate. And
that's one contract.
Yeah, and from there on, from my knowledge, they've been conducting business in the courts. That's why they call it a court, because it's a game going on, and we just don't understand that, you know what I mean, the business that's going on in the contracts. We basically don't research too much.
If you're on a tennis court, what you use?
You use a tennis racket, my brother, and a tennis ball.
A racket, right? You use a racket.
Yeah.
It's a game, man. It's all a game. It's all based on contracts. You're absolutely correct.
Okay.
You have another question?
Right. Yeah, my other question was, because I haven't found out. I've been following the brother that builds on status correction and things of that nature. He uses the UCC to correct the status. And I want to know if you can just go in and just, you know, make your affidavit the truth to basically claim your power of attorney and all that stuff. Can you just go do that at the courthouse yourself, or is it better to go through the UCC?
Well, first of all, let me say this here. What most of us are under the impression of is the fact that we have something that these criminals are forced to recognize. No, it doesn't go that way. Whatever contract you create is a contract that you are familiar with because you're the one to create it, and you can enforce it based on the fact that you know what you gave them. See, we keep trying to think that if I do this, give them this document, I can step back and then something's supposed to happen.
I wasn't necessarily saying that, but I was saying which is the best method to undertake yourself coming out their jurisdiction. Like, what's the best way to do it? And whichever is the best method, I'm willing to do it. But I've been
Okay, well, let me put it to you this way. First of all, they're not concerned about jurisdiction. Our status, they already know they're crooks. So the best thing to use is contract law.
Contract law, okay.
Contract law, right. You want to enforce the contract that you put in motion. Remember the story I told you about the guy that was in jail and one of the little trustees in there came up and asked him, did you sign for that chessboard you got? Do you have a receipt for that chessboard? He said, no, I don't. He said, well, I'm going to have to confiscate that. He said, well, if you confiscate this, I'm going to have to, you'll be liable for $10,000 for the pieces, $10,000 for the chessboard, and $10,000 for the trespass. That's $30,000. And so the gentleman took it. So what he did was he acted on verbal contract. He went to the sergeant and told the sergeant. Then he went to the lieutenant, told the lieutenant. The lieutenant told him to go to the captain. So he went to the captain and told him. The captain said he can't do nothing about it. You got to go to the warden. He went to the warden. So the warden tried to send him back down to the sergeant. He said, well, I've already done that. He said, you don't mind if I seek formal remedy because I just tried informal remedy. He said, no, I don't. So he wrote it up. And had the guy served with the papers. And the guy messed around and sent him a threatening letter, said, well, if you do this here, I'm going to do this right now. That's a threat and a tort. So what he did was he had it filed into the court and said, I don't see no reason why in the world why this guy should not be removed from office. Next thing you know, here come the police out to the jail. They picked him up, and they took him and put him in jail, contract law. So I don't need a UCC for nothing.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm always going to do more diligence, and I have to do more due diligence on contract law so I can use contract law.
Yeah, there you go, because everything operates on contract. You can't go to Winn-Dixie grocery store and buy no string beans without no contract being involved. I don't care if you use a piece of plastic. It's still a contract, and before you leave there, it will give you a receipt. If you try to walk away, say, excuse me, sir, here go your receipt. Here go the other part of the contract.
Yeah. Okay.
Everything operates on contract. Okay, brother, okay. Let me open up this other line here.
All right. Good looking out, Tiger.
Peace, brother. All right. 813 area code. What's your question? The comment. Tell us who you are.
Hello, my name is. I want to say peace to you. My name is Saladin from Florida Republic, and can you explain briefly what child support is and what it is not?
Well, child support is first of all is not legitimate. Second of all, is robbery. Plain and simple. You see, according to the rules of contract law now, okay, and because what you have not done, see you, if you have not set up your estate, if you have not set up your living trust, you've not operating on the private side, you have no will on file, you have not done anything to secure yourself, according to the contract that you are already bound in at birth, your children does not belong to you. They belong to the state. You haven't claimed them.
Right.
You see. You thought this, they come. She came and told you, well, I'm pregnant, and it's time for me to have this baby. And you had a little baby boy. Your chest stuck out. You and the fellow smoking a cigar. And not now, man will come up to you and say, look, that ain't your baby. I'm taking that baby. That's mine. Oh, no, man, you can't do, man. This is my baby, man. This is my, but then the Hingham Child Service said, well, sir, we got to call that there was some child abuse over here. We're going to have to pay the insurance. And you trying to figure out, well, how, you know, this, what happened?
Yeah.
What is all on contract, you see?
Yeah.
So you want to set up your estate, you want to go ahead and put everything in place and in motion so that you will have what? You will have evidence that you can present of your position.
Okay.
You see. And we want to make this ammunition now before anything go wrong. See, don't wait till something go wrong and then go running out like the scarecrow on the Wizard of Oz talking about, help! Go ahead on
okay,
and get yourself together now, man. Do it now. Get it in. Put everything in place. Put your children there. If your children are under 18, now if you have a son or a daughter, when you set up your estate, you will claim your children and your wife, if you've got a wife, as property of your estate. As you're the executor of that estate, and your children and your wife is listed as your property. Prior to them being, the children being under 18, or if you have a child that's before they get 18, they got married, now that child had to set up his own estate, so you can't list that child on your estate. You follow me?
Yes, sir.
It doesn't matter if they're married and living in your house. You know, these are part of the rules of the game. And the estate manual is inside Tahaka's Archives. And for those of you who don't have Tahaka Archives, go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, click on the link, tahakaarchives.org, go over there, access those archives, and then that way you can go to putting these things in place, putting these contracts in place, so when something happens, you have some tools that you can use. Man,
okay.
Throw you down out there in the streets, lock you up in jail and stuff, and all this right here stuff. Well, hey, man, we need to assign this right here to the case before we go in and start dealing with this here. So we finna perform an exorcism and a crucifixion at the same time. And these are the tools that we use. See, but you can't go in there naked and tell them, well, I according to the Constitution, whoa, wait a minute, Constitution. That should never roll off your lip. It ain't never had nothing to do with you. Not the Constitution, not unless it meant somebody slaving you. Otherwise, well, I know my rights. What rights? What kind of rights? I'm an American citizen. How can a corporation have citizens? When the last time you seen Walmart with a citizen?
All right, brother.
Anything else, bro?
No, thank
all
you
right.
for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, brother. Area code 267. 267. Okay. Area code 702. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, which question to comment.
Hey, Tarek. This is Dustin. I'm from out of Las Vegas right now. My question was regarding I'm paying a car note, and it's owned by the bank. And my question was, if I get a proper status, and how do I make claims? Wait, first, my first question is, do I still have to pay insurance if I'm in my proper status? And
okay, wait. You're insured in your proper status. So let me make sure I got this right. Okay. So if you're Puerto Rican, because you're Puerto Rican, you're not supposed to pay insurance. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying if I'm in my proper status and I'm paying notes, and you know they going hand in hand with the way they working out here with the when you're paying notes and the insurance and the registration and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
Can they use that contract against me?
Your status, your proper status don't have nothing to do with you operating in commerce. I just got to talking about that. We're under the impression that, I got my Moorish documents, I'm a Moor, and I ain't supposed to pay this, and I ain't supposed to pay that. My question is, where your government at? What's backing you up? How you gonna get in the commerce game, and your status, regardless of what it is, decide that you're not going to do this, that, and the other. You sign a contract, man. So what you're going to have to do is cancel the contract. You got to opt out the contract. It doesn't have anything to do with your status.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? See, this is Rome. Rome operates in commerce under contract law. There ain't but two types of people inside the United States according to Rome. You either are producer or non-producer, or you are either a debtor or a creditor, one of the two. Either one of the two, it doesn't matter. You're either debtor or creditor, one or two. So if you operate on the private side and you get into the creditor status, you put everything in place and you operate on the private side, now we have a problem. Because, see, what Rome does, see, Rome dealing with a fiction. If you look at the documentation that Rome send you, when they send you anything from a government agency, the phone, light and water company, all of these companies, every time they address you or send anything to you in the mail, it's always addressed to a fiction. They're not dealing with the man. So we can't get confused on, okay, if I do my status, then that ought to make a difference. No, you got to deal with that fiction and deal with this commerce. Deal with contract law. Understand contract law. Then you can deal with this thing. Deal with the contract. Look at the contracts that you're signing with these people. It doesn't matter what it is. And just keep one thing in mind. Just one thing. We are dealing with criminals. If you can understand that, the whole system is a criminal. Anytime you hear the word democracy, run.
mm-hmm.
Okay, you got another question?
Okay. Yeah, so when I cancel that contract, I would basically negotiate another contract, or I would set that in my own estate. How does that work when if you're paying notes on the car?
Well, first of all, if you look at the original contract that you signed with them from the car, whether you had the car financed or not, look down at the bottom of the contract, and it clearly tells you that you're going to have to make payments on this, and this cannot be discharged until 6 months after you have this vehicle in your possession. In other words, you're going to have to honor the contract for at least 6 months for discharge. In other words, anything that you would attempt to do on the private side cannot be done until that 6 month period of time is over. Then you can, for those people who know how to do it, that process is in my archives also. You can do the A for B process, or you can discharge it, or you can cancel the contract by sending certain documentation. That documentation is located over there at talkarchive.org. But that's how you go about doing that. Are you there? Okay, my brother called on drop. Okay, if anybody got any more questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line and see what you got, okay?
Brother, what's on your mind?
Okay,
A couple things possibly, but as a Hebrew, how do I deal with these people as I have covenant with Yah?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And if you are honoring the contract that you have between Yah and you, then I don't ever think you would have to deal with Rome.
Correct.
If you're honoring
that's
that
my
contract,
point also. Correct. That's how I feel also. I wanted to ask, they sent me a jury duty piece of paper. Now, I've been through their system. I've been incarcerated, drug offense, all that good stuff. Actually, fought my case on my own because, you know, these lawyers ain't shit, up to their Supreme Court and got oral arguments. So I kind of understand what they're doing here, but they sent me a jury duty notice and a summons, and I wanted to send it back and say something in courtesy to them to let them know that I know and that I'm not a part of their legal fiction or their unlegal fiction. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's appropriate,
okay,
or should I just ignore these jokers?
This is a
jury duty. Now, I haven't contracted with them in 2-3 years.
Okay. Well, you can refuse the contract and write them a nice, courteous letter and say, well, I don't think that I'm the right man you need to be on the jury because I can't see no way possible for me to come in and say anything good or find anybody guilty in your system. Especially after the Tulsa riots, and you understand what I'm telling you?
Oh, I follow you perfectly. Well, what I was going to do was simply tell them, send it right back, and return the sender. I don't believe in the legal fiction.
Well.
And also, one thing I don't get is why you guys are speaking toward dealing with or creating more fraudulent contracts with a crook. I mean, this crook came about. I mean, you came into this world, and this crook snatched you up and pulled a fraud upon you. Now, in getting out of that fraud, shouldn't you be seeking to contract with something other than the crook that bestowed a fraud upon you in the first place?
Well, you can do this.
If I went and purchased something from you, you sold me a fraudulent contract of some way, some manner, right? And I found out about it, and I ended the contract. It wouldn't be prudent for me to contract with you again. I could refuse that, and this is something that I would love for you to address as toward anyone who doesn't feel they're under Yah's covenant, why would you consider contracting with the same crook that defrauded you previously? And why aren't you refusing that as you frauded me once, I'm not going to be frauded twice? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Why would you continue to mess with this crook?
Well, I'm not trying to teach the moles how to contract with them. I'm trying to teach them about the contract system, about the game, how the game works, and how to deal with the system and how to formulate your own contracts if you have to. If you're in a contract situation, somebody mm-hmm. trying to get you in a contract, you can take a contract and opt out that contract. That's exactly what I'm trying to tell you about the jury duty.
Null and void.
Refusal of contract.
Correct. And then you can also refuse to contract with the entity that you had contracted with formerly because that entity had defrauded you. Am I correct?
Yes, you could do that too. Exactly.
So why aren't people taking that route, number one? And I have another question for you. are we not in doing this? And I've been working with the natural law, and I've come to conclusion, right, just like you said, I ain't got to do a damn thing. But in that, all right, and made you a legal fixture, right? Now what we're talking about here is taking over that legal fiction for yourself, correct? And playing
okay,
that game.
Okay, now you can
I'm,
do
I'm
that.
I'm asking. I am asking. Isn't that it? Or in these motions and through the contract law, are people acting at, you know, for the soul which is within?
You got some people who are actually collapsing the entire trust. The entire Sensky K trust is being collapsed. And even if you say you want to file bankruptcy, if you do your own bankruptcy papers, make sure everything is correct, then you can get you a certificate of service to make sure that it goes into Rome's system correctly, attach that birth certificate to it. And what he would have to do, what the judge would have to do, is he would have to assign an attorney to go over that bankruptcy and collapse that trust, take that Sesky K trust, and make sure all your debtors are paid in cover.
Well, you mean the corporate fixture.
Right, in the remainder of the funds in that trust have to be forwarded to you. See, the reason why I have to go at this way and have to teach this way is because the majority of us are in commerce. We're in commerce and we're getting beat up in commerce, and what I'm trying to do is teach the brothers and sisters how to operate in commerce, how to formulate your own contracts, how to defend yourself, how to exercise the authority that you have based on what you have learned about the system in commerce. You see what I'm saying?
Correct. If they choose to play the role or play the game.
That's correct. I can lead a horse to water, but I can't make him drink.
Oh, sure enough, and nor should he drink if it's laced with nuclear waste. If there's plutonium in that water, you might not want to drink. But my point is really that why should they play the game? Why shouldn't they opt out?
Well, they can't. You can't opt out the entire game. You can operate on the private side completely out the game. You can. That's possible. And you can go ahead and set up your a living trust and start simply operating on the private side. You can do that. There are many things that you can do. But I'm trying to make people aware of what they can do and what's available and what's out there and what to do and what not to do.
And you're doing a beautiful job. Don't get it twisted. I'm pleased, man. I'm pleased that you are doing this, you know, bro. Now, can you speak toward the trust? Because, like you know, you got the One People's Public Trust out there, and they're speaking toward this trust. And, see, my whole thing is that you need to get rid of the money. Get the money out of the system. Go R&B, resource-based economy, something of that nature. But the money is what really twists this up. But can you tell the people or speak toward them about the trust? And that these trusts have been set up for some time, and these trusts are fairly wealthy. And from what I'm hearing, that if the people started to capitalize or gather these trusts and open these trusts up, it could really, you know, pull things together or, you know, rewrite society.
Okay. Well, the first thing,
isn't there a point of any blacks, Moors and otherwise, that have been enslaved in America, and that they're going from the Hebrew scriptures that the Hebrews were supposed to be slaves, but the rest weren't. Now, I'm just going to let you rap. I got no more. I want to hear you talk.
Okay. All right. Let me say something about the trust, why it's important to set up a trust, and before we even consider doing anything about a trust. The first thing that we want to do, this is step one. You want to learn everything you possibly can about the trust. What is a trust? I would like to recommend a manual called Wise Trust Manual. Now, that entire manual is located right there in my archives, talkarchives.org, and it will teach you everything there is that you need to know about the trust. But before you go thinking that you can, because I got trust, the actual trust documents where you can fill in the blanks and all of that right there, before you do any of that, you want to study the trust manual, learn everything you can about what it is that you're about to do so that you will be able to do it successfully. You cannot mix public with private. You can't accidentally say, well, I messed around and took this private over here and the public or this public over here. No, we can't make them mistakes. Okay. So to answer anything about that trust, the first thing I have to say before I go into any details about a trust is, number one, learn everything you can about a trust. I think at that point right there, because it's so important, because all your major corporations and stuff, these guys are using trusts. They're operating under trusts. Their assets and everything is, you know, you're not owning anything, but you're controlling everything through a trust. So I would advise anybody to study Wise Trust Manual before you ever get into dealing with a trust. I'm going to leave that right there because I don't want to complicate anything for anybody. Area code 252. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question and comment. 252.
Hey, what's up? This is Mike calling from Charlotte. How you doing?
Hey, Mike. I'm fine, brother.
I got a,
what's on your mind?
Question regarding your traffic case. Did you actually have to go to court for that?
No, I ain't going to no court. See, that if you look at one of... If you look at what I'm saying, okay, this step one, okay. I created my own tag on my computer on a sheet of paper. I took it and got it laminated. It was beautiful, nice color, everything. And laminated, put it on the back of my truck, sealed it so it wouldn't get wet and all that, so it'd be nice and shiny. And then I created me some ID according to what I knew about contract law. So I created that, and I used that as ID, and then I got on the street. I'm ready to exercise my right to travel. I just need the man to show me who it is that's paying me to drive. Otherwise, he in violation. So they stopped me, and they had about 30, 40 police out there, and they all was trying to figure out, well, what is this? This is new. We ain't never seen nothing like this. What it is? And finally, one guy came up, and he had to look through my documentation that I had behind my ID. He said, well, look, I'm ready to go. You do what you want to do. But when he started frying fish, he ain't going to fry me. So he left me alone. So all the rest of them left. And wasn't nobody standing but me and the man that pulled me over. And he tried to make me think that he still has some authority. Anyway, you know, I can, you know, I could take you to jail. I said, you can't do nothing, man. Give me my stuff. Let me go. And he went and gave it to me. I got in my truck and backed out and left him. And that was the end. Then as soon as I got home, I started the administrative process. I started with his boss. I named him in it. And I gave his boss 30 days to respond. He ran and got a law firm. I took the law firm and sold them on the bus on paper. And that was the end. Wasn't nobody sending nothing to me talking about, well, you got to go to court. Nothing. Because they all on the affidavit. They all on the screen. They got it by law. They got to respond. They didn't respond, so now we had a dilemma. So what he did was he told the rest of the men, "Look, don't stop him no more, because he's not one of the regular Negroes."
Okay. So in your administrative process, did you send out a certificate of non-response? That type of thing.
No, I didn't even do that. Once I served the initial affidavit and he ran and got the law firm, I threw them under the bus. They called him and said, hey, man, he finna fry ours too. That was the end. Everybody got quiet. I got quiet. They got quiet. So I went back out there, got back in my truck, got back on the street, and me and the popo ride bubble to bubble. And when he pulled up behind me, he called downtown and said, hey, we got a situation. This guy's driving this Isuzu dark gray. He's got this plate on the back that says Moorish American Freedom of Right to Travel. And I know what they asked him. So, well, what color is this dark gray? He said, that's that dude again. Back up. Don't mess with him.
Wow. So you didn't have to put nobody. You didn't really have to put nobody on notice. You didn't send your affidavit to the Secretary of State.
I didn't do none of that because I was prepared to fry the whole fish, and the fish knew it. Then I got into my girl's car, and I couldn't get her to do anything to get rid of her tag and her driver's license because she was scared. And I got out on the pavement with that. And they pulled me over. So you speeding. So I let him know his photographs of the hanging of your boss and his law firm right here. I got it on paper. You can see that right there. And the same tickets that all them tickets that got down there that I ain't paid and all of that right there. So they wrote another ticket. I sent another affidavit down there to him again. Said, y'all done it again. And so he put the word back out. Hey, he done changed cars. Same dude, leave him alone. So they pull up behind her in the car. She said, they're riding bumper to bumper. I said, they're reading the tag to make sure that's the car they ain't supposed to stop. And that's the end.
Well, I'm sure a lot of them would wish that would be that more. It would be simple like that, though.
Well, you until you learn, see, the thing is, when you learn how to defend yourself, you don't have to worry about it. If you got this knowledge in your head and you know what to do as soon as they rule you. I had a Caucasian gentleman on the job. I asked him, I said, if anybody offered you $1 million, would you get in the ring with Muhammad Ali? He said, for $1 million? He said, of course I would. He said, he wouldn't have had to hit me but one time. After that, he would have been hitting me in the back because I'm going to be on my way out of there. To get the $1 million. So you learn, and once you learn, then you are confident. You don't live in fear of what's going to happen when they cut the blue lights on you. Ain't no fear because you know what to do with the situation. If he tell you, well, look, you know, I don't know nothing about none of this right here. You don't have a driver's license, I'm going to take you to jail. Well, the first thing ought to come in your mind is ching-ching. It's time for you to get paid. You be the happiest joker in the jail. The only thing you want to do is start writing down names of people.
Have you ever got paid off? Have you ever got paid off this?
Uh-huh.
I ain't never
got down there to get paid. I sent a notice to him. It's like this here. He's in a position right now where everything is still standing. Every one of them Supreme Court rulings and them points I put down there was attached to a $4,000 ticket.
Would you ever put it go to the court, file it in the court for a civil suit?
If I have to. I still got the affidavit. I still got the return receipt where they signed for it. I got the receipt from where I actually paid for the return receipt. All of that attached to the documents in a file. I got all this information, which will clearly show that he had already been warned. I made an honest attempt informally to settle the matter. If there's anything else that comes up in the future involving me inside my right of freedom of right to travel, I can just simply do another document and enforce everything that I've already done all the way to the max.
So I'm saying, so based on that, why don't you just go ahead and do a civil suit based on that?
No. I ain't going to mess with him.
Oh, you're not going to mess with
him? You don't mess with me. He don't mess with me, I don't mess with him.
Okay.
I get outside, I get in any kind of way, car I want, and go anywhere I want to go. I pull my truck up downtown, park in front of the parking meter, don't put no money in it, get in, go out, get stay inside as long as I want to stay. Go eat lunch if I want to, and come back. You better not put no ticket on my truck. But see, the thing is, what they need to know is if you know the rules of the game, and if you know the rules of the game, you know how to enforce your contract. If you know for a fact that if you get in the ring with Muhammad Ali, somebody gonna get knocked out. So if you know this, then the best thing to do is not tangle with it. It's just like being in grade school. You was in kindergarten. You got a bully. The bully come around. He want to push you around. He want to shove you. How you going to stop him from doing that? What you going to do? Every day you going to come there, and I sure hope I don't see him. Oh, my God, he done saw me. And he start pushing you around. The only way you're going to stop him is you're going to have to knock him out. And once you knock him out, then the next time you see him, he ain't going to mess with you, because if he does, he knows that he's got to fight. So he's going to push it on somebody else. See, but the reason why I'm talking to Moore about this stuff is because we keep rolling over. We keep saying, well, it ain't for $75, I'm going on and pay it. And I was speeding. Well, the Supreme Court say speeding is not a ticketable or an arrestable offense. And you got the right to travel. And the only person that needs a driver's license is a person. And if you look on the back of your driver's license, it clearly say it's property of the state. So when he's coming to you, he's asking you for a driver's license registration, he's asking you, do you have somebody else's property? And if you say yeah, well you are under contract to these people. They can do anything they want to do to you. The first thing he gonna do is write you a ticket. What is that? You owe me money. Just because I stopped you, but you got to make sure that every time he stop you, somebody gonna get a whooping. Every time. So the best thing to do is when you come around bullying, make sure you don't see me. Because I ain't ready for you. I'm ready for you.
But you saying that you never put anything on record. That's what you're saying? You never put anybody on notice?
Yeah, I put the sheriff on notice because the man that was out there on the streets is a private contractor. He's not an officer of the law. The sheriff is an officer of the law. He's the only one that's supposed to be out in them streets stopping anybody or doing anything. But before you got stopped,
did you put anybody on notice?
No, I ain't put nobody on notice or nothing.
Oh wow, okay.
If you was in elementary school and you knew a bully was beating up people, what are you gonna do? Write him a letter and say, well, look, my name is John. I'm down at the East Wing. I'm just putting you on notice. Please don't beat me up. I'm a good guy, and I just want to put you on notice. Now, you wouldn't do that. No, I didn't put anybody on notice. I didn't put nobody on notice. Now, I do recommend that because we got some moles out there. When the man cut the lights on, the first thing that grips us is fear. Because, see, back in the day, back in the 40s and 50s, they had one red light on top of the car. But then there are psychologists and psychiatrists did research on it, and they understood that any time they were putting a red light on, flashing the red light on people, the people, it had a different effect on the mind of the people. The people wasn't all that fear, had fear, they had anger. Because here come another man with a red light flashing in your face, which means that you're supposed to charge. And so you had all kind of police getting whooped out on the street. So what they did was they took the red light off and they start putting multiple lights, flashing blue lights to make you less calm. And then they had a little red light in there mixed up with them, and they blink all these different. All this creates confusion in your mind. It has a psychological effect on you. So what you do is you master contract law. And it doesn't matter what kind of light the guy flashing, they stop the wrong man. It's as simple as that.
Hmm. Okay. So what is your, I want to ask you another, this is off all the question. I want to ask you, what is your take on the case with, what's her name, Apka Bay?
Oh, who?
Apka Bay.
What is that? Who's that?
Because
I don't watch television.
Okay, the lady that was in, I think her name was, she was in Memphis, and she was arrested for, they call it squatting the house.
Uh-huh. Okay, no, because I don't watch TV. I don't, you know, the only time I cut my TV on is if I need to know what time the weather is, because I have to take breaks and stuff, and I might go outside and relax. So I might decide to put my grill out or something like that. Other than that, there's no need for me to watch TV. So
no,
I
mean, but she's under the Moorish. She's a Moor, so you know.
Uh-huh. So she claimed this house, and she was sitting in this house. She claimed it.
Mm-hmm.
Is what you're saying? Okay. Yeah. Well, once again. You have to keep in mind it's all on contract, and the banks can't own nothing. And if you really, really understand the fact that there is absolutely no money inside the United States, we have debt notes. They're creating them out of thin air. There's no gold backing it up. So the only real wealth is through our human energy. Even if you had thousands of acres of land, until there's a man on the land absolutely has no value. Until there's a man on the land, or there's something on the land that can generate energy. So we have human energy that's generating the real wealth, and we have people who are capitalizing on the energy, which is the real wealth of other people, and leading them to believe that they are indebted, and that's impossible because the only thing that we have is debt, and you cannot pay a debt with a debt. So we have a lady who was squatting in the house. In my opinion, if she's gonna do that, she should have made sure that she had everything that she need on paper and in her head that she can enforce in the first place. See, with this game here, what you have to do is you're gonna have to put these devils in a position where they cannot mess with you without severe consequences.
Hmm.
In any firefight, you discover that massive artillery went out every time. You know, all we had to do is go back and watch the movie Malcolm X that Spike Lee did. Malcolm then went to the police station. He said, we demand to see our brother. Well, we ain't got to show you nobody. I suggest you look out that window. When you look out the window, he seen the nation. He said, man, let him in. Let him go back there and see him. Go get him some medical help. Do anything you have to do, because we got over 30,000 mad you-know-what out there. We need to do something. We ain't never seen this here before. We're not accustomed to this right here. These brothers ain't laying down. They standing up. See. And our problem is we've been laying down. You got to stand up. They jumping out of cars. And I have actually seen videos where policemen, private contractors, get out of car. A man starts running. He run behind a young boy, shot him in the back. When the boy dropped, he walked over there and stood up and killed him, shot him again. Now, my question is, where the boy daddy at? Has the boy daddy found out who the shooter was and where he at? Just that simple. You come tell me all you want, well, we had to shoot your son, he did something, something. Are we going to do an investigation? You go ahead and do it. But I can assure you, you ain't going to have time. You don't have time. You got to stop these people from rolling you. See, they led you to believe that, well, we represent the authority of the law. You mean after the murder of 200 million of my people? See, I'm not like the rest. I know who I am. You can't, you know, you can believe I'm whatever you want to believe. You can call a lion a rabbit all you want, but I guarantee you you'll stop calling him a rabbit as soon as he bites you. And you had to have the same tenacity when you're dealing with these people, with any contracts you're dealing with, mortgage companies, banks, student loans, Internal Revenue Service, you have to have this kind of confidence. And the way you get that is you have a complete and concise understanding of the system and what you are doing. You got to know what you're doing. Brother, I'm going to have to go to the next caller.
All right. Appreciate it.
Peace. Area code 954. Tell me who you are, where you come from, what your question is coming.
This is Janet Wigley from Hollywood, Florida. How are you today?
Hey, Janet, what's going on?
Nothing much. Listen, I got a question, and it is I'm being denied of my Social Security disability.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any forms in that paper, in the packet that you have that I could send them?
Well, in dealing with what you're trying to do is get them to keep giving you Social Security?
I'm trying to get it. They have been denying me of it.
Okay, well, there's certain things that you can do down in my archives. You have my archives already, I'm sure. And
yes.
Give me a call tomorrow. We'll get in there and we'll dig up something and we can get it over there to them.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right.
Area code 469. Tell me who you are, where you call from, what your question and comment. 469.
Yes. This is Daryl from Fort Worth, Texas. I heard you on Yusuf's
hey,
show this morning. Hey, how you doing?
All right, brother, what's going on? I'm just fine.
I got a question for you. I got stopped probably about a month ago because I don't have an inspection sticker on my truck. I refuse to put one on my truck because I'm not doing commerce in my private time. So I got stopped by the police officer, and he stopped me about the inspection sticker. So he said, well, you know, I stopped you because of your inspection sticker. And I said, well, man, you know, I'm not doing commerce at this time. I'm traveling. I'm going to the store. So he walked off and he came back. He said, let me see your driver's license. I said, well, sir, I just told you I'm not driving. I'm traveling. So, you know, I mean, man, make a long story short, they took me to jail. But what I was trying to figure out, you said you didn't give any notice. Did you just take off all your registration and your tags? Because if it is contract, then you can just release yourself from that contract at any time, correct?
What I did is simply took off the, when I found out about it and studied it, I took the their stuff off my vehicle, threw their license to the side, and started signing my right to travel. But I learned what to do in every situation. One thing you have to understand that for those of you who are out there trying to do this, if you want to try to do this, I advise you to remember one thing: no evidence, no case. Go to the little spy shop and get your little audio and video cameras and install in there so you can download it on your computer and upload it to a disk or what have you. So you can get some evidence and then learn how to do the administrative process, learn how to formulate your affidavits and get them down there on them, and then enforce these things. You can enforce something that you know about. And when it comes to a man coming to your vehicle, first of all, you got to understand this. The man that's trying to flex on you with the gun and the badge, He is a private contractor. He's enforcing what's called public policy. That is not law. He has the authority of a security guard. The only one that is has authority of law on the oath is the his boss, which is whoever is elected by the public through an election. That is an officer. So you got a man that's coming to you, and he's telling you, I'm going to have to ask, you don't have a driver's license, I'm going to have to ask you to step out the car. You have to inform him on the record that's being recorded, you understand me, that
right.
If I step out this vehicle because you told me to, that I'll be volunteering for abduction, and I can't do that, sir, for the record. Mm-hmm. Now, you got a clear and concise statement right there on your record. At that point,
okay.
You can send that there. You can stop your cell phone and send that right straight on to the to your email. Get it on the record.
Okay.
All right. Now, in anything else, you can take the rest of it, send it right on there. And now, if he's going to forcefully snatch your car over on a bushy windshield and pull you out and stuff, you have officially been abducted. By
okay.
Nothing more than another man. You understand what
okay.
I'm saying? It's just like
right.
I come to your house, kick your door in, and drag you out and put you in the car and take you away. I've abducted you. And that's the same exact thing. But see, what we, most of us, have in our mind is that, well, he's an officer of the law. No, he ain't. He's a private contractor.
Right.
He's just another man. But you're going to have to learn how to defend yourself against this thing. Because once he does something, then you and him should be joined at the hip all the way to the Supreme Court.
Now,
and
see,
his
I
wife,
agree.
Being his wife, she is an accessory after the fact. She got to be served. She got to be sued, too.
Oh. Okay. Because I was reading, I think it was under Title 18, I think it was Title 18, 6221, that once they step outside outside of their office, or I guess it's talking about police officers, that they can be held accountable for kidnapping, abduction, and things of that nature.
Well, first of all, before you, did this happen in the daytime?
Yes. Uh huh.
Okay. Well, about what time approximately it was?
It was about 5:45. Me and my wife was going to get some envelopes to mail out some stuff,
okay,
and everything like that. So my wife was actually in the car, so he never asked.
Okay,
me
so you got a witness right there.
Right.
He asked you to step outside the car.
Right.
And you did so.
Right. Right. So
okay,
I guess
so
that was my.
You abducted.
Okay, so I never should have even just stepped outside of the car.
Well, you, first of all, understand what I'm telling you. The first thing you want to do is you want to get a record. Just,
okay.
Just politely say, with all due respect, I cannot volunteer for abduction for the record. I cannot, you have given me an order as if you are an officer of the law. Could you please provide me with some identification that clearly shows your identity? I cannot volunteer for abduction. Now, you have a wife that cannot testify on your behalf because you have to clearly state that he asked you to step outside the car and you did so. That's what she's going to have to testify on the record. So you got no case.
Okay.
On that issue.
Okay.
On that issue. Did you give him a driver's license?
No. Uh-uh. Nope.
Okay. All right. And so when he took you to jail, what was he charging you with? Why did he say he was taking you to jail? What was the probable
failure
cause?
Failure to ID.
Failure to ID. Okay.
Right.
So what I would do at this particular point is I would go and look up the statutes and ordinances to see whether or not lawfully, I had to show another man with no more authority than a security guard any identification. And did you ask him for identification?
Yeah, and he refused to give it to me. And I asked him for his supervisor, and he refused to have his supervisor to come out. So what he did,
okay,
he called another officer.
Did you call 911?
No, uh-uh.
And tell him there's a man out here with a gun, and he acting crazy. I think he gonna shoot me. I need to get somebody out here. I'm on the corner. So what the man look like? Well, he's a Caucasian gentleman, whatever, but he really looking crazy. Man, please get somebody out here. I'm right here on the corner on such and such a thing. Hang on the phone.
Okay.
And so you were really in the capital seat because you had your wife with you.
Uh-huh.
As a witness.
Okay.
And if there's anybody else that's standing there watching the situation, you want to make sure you go back over there and see if you can rustle them up and get them to be a witness, to testify,
okay,
if you're going to go into court. But the first thing I do is I just exhaust the administrative process. I don't deal with all that old stuff there. I just tell them how much they owe me for the violation or whatever. They don't like it. Then we can exhaust this thing, and then we're going on down to the wire, man to man, toe to toe. That's how I do it.
Okay, because I had heard that normally, like, once you do that, you give, like, notice, I guess, to the Secretary of State, to your county clerks, I guess, and things of that nature, to let them know that, you know, you're no longer, you're rescinding your contract with them. As far
okay,
as making
well,
them...
I've heard a whole lot of stuff to that effect, too, but I have to deal with them personally. When they deal with me, but usually they don't mess with me.
Okay.
So
okay,
there's a whole lot that I haven't done because they did nothing. You don't mess with me, I don't mess with you. You mess with me, I'm mess with you. So that's
now
that's,
I got one
that's
more question for you. One more question
okay
for you. Now when you made your plates, how do you have like a template on how you done it? Did you put numbers on it? Did you put your name on it?
No, the only thing I did on there is I put the Moorish symbol there, and I think I put something involving commerce there. The photographs of it is right there on Facebook. If you want to see these pictures of me standing there with this document and this stuff on the truck, just send a friend request on Facebook to Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and I'll grant that friend request because they keep me blocked over there. They don't like my kind of information. So that way you can go and actually click on the picture, and it'll come up, big picture, where you can actually see how I done it. The only thing that I had on there was Indigenous Moor. And then
okay,
I had my
okay
Moorish name down there and All Rights Reserved, and that was it. And I had it laminated
okay
so it couldn't get wet, and
mm-hmm. That's
the way I did that.
And now, did you make your own ID, or did you have someone? Because I got my nationality, but what I did under my nationality, I changed my whole name. So,
what I did with the ID. Is I just put on there everything I knew about my rights to travel and all the Supreme Court rulings. And
mm-hmm.
I had it signed, and I had it notarized and stamped by a notary. And
okay. That
was my identification. I run off a picture of myself and put that on there. And
okay,
it was kind of difficult to see, but nevertheless, it was an image. And as far as I'm concerned, if you can't see it, I don't care. But this is my ID, take it or leave, because this is the contract that I created, and this is the contract that I'm going to enforce. Now, what I need you to do, Mr. Policeman, is if you think anything on this document invalidates it as a bona fide contract, and all of these Supreme Court judges is a liar, I need you to get on the witness stand and just testify to which one lied under oath. And I get a long sheet of paper and write across the top of it, perjury, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And every time you perjure yourself, I'm going to check it off and then cross-examine the witness.
Okay.
I'm a, is there any way I can, I'll friend you. My name is Daryl Royal on Facebook, where I can keep in contact with you, because I want to make my own ID and everything, because, you know, once you know better, you should do better. And, you know, I don't want to make these people, I don't want to go and get my stuff registered and give them power of attorney over something that I know all I'm doing is coming into contract and I don't have to.
Well, before you do any printing up or anything, the first thing that you want to do, you want to get the power that you're going to need to use to enforce the contracts that you're about to present. That comes first and foremost. You got to have the power, and that give you what they would call the ball to get out there. Because when you're talking about getting out there on the pavement, and you going toe to toe with the bear. Now see, prayer is fine in prayer meeting, but when it comes to bear meeting, you got to have something else. So you want to make sure that you got the power.
Right.
Before you print anything, because the documents that you print don't have no more authority and power than the force that you can put behind it.
Okay.
All right, brother. I'm going to the next caller.
Thank you, brother.
You're welcome. Area code 850. Are you there?
Can I tell the question? This is Brother Bay from Panama City.
Okay, babe, what's on your mind?
Okay. Hey, I heard you say to the other brother, right, about the bankruptcy process. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And like when you were saying that you can take care of the mortgage, the credit cards, the student loans, okay. But this was after the living trust was set up, right? And you said everybody was gonna get taken care of, right?
Well, no. When you're talking about when I mentioned a bankruptcy process, what I would really prefer that you do is just send me an email to hawker53@hotmail.com, and I'll send you Secrets of America. And inside that document, it's straight out of the mouth of a judge. He tells you how to perform your own bankruptcy. See, the last thing that you ever want to do is you never want to get an attorney to do your will for you. You want to do that yourself. And you want to file that as a deed. You do not want to get an attorney to do a bankruptcy for you. You want to learn that process, do that process for yourself, get your certificate of service, which is a document that authenticates the fact that you filed it into the court record, and then attach that birth certificate to it. And all subsequent documentation that supports your bankruptcy, and you do that yourself. Now, by doing that, you're putting the actual certificate trust access on there, which clearly shows that you are the person that's attached to that. And what he would do is he would have to assign an attorney to your bankruptcy.
Right.
You see.
Okay.
And
okay.
Of course, what he would do.
Right. And
I'm listening.
But you said, how will we receive the remainder after the trust?
Well, what the attorney, according to the judge. According to the judge's document, what they are supposed to do is they're supposed to go ahead and use your bond that you've given them, because it's printed on bond paper. It is a bond and signed by the governor of the state and all this stuff. And you would have to what he would have to do is he would have to take the funds to satisfy your debtors out of that bond account, and the remainder. I'm not sure if it's the – it will probably have to be all accumulated interest on that bond, because the bond was created by someone else who governs the principal, so therefore the proceeds left from that will have to be forwarded to you according to that document. So that's what I would do. And I would do that anyway, you know, because I don't believe in using attorneys for anything, because their loyalty is first to the firm, second to the court, and third not to the client.
Okay, and just to get things clear, you can do that on a mortgage also, right?
Well, on a mortgage, there's certain things that you want to do. That's why we've created the Council of Mortgage contract inside TeHawkinsArchives.org, and there are several documents that you're going to fill out, and there's an instruction manual that gives you step-by-step to cancel that contract. And then there's another separate document that you're going to use to deal with the mortgage company to shut them down, period.
Okay.
And force them to send you the deeds to the property, cancel the property taxes, all of that is right there in that package. And that's at TeHawkinsArchives.org.
Okay. I'll be giving you a call, Mo.
All right, Mo. All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we will be taking a quick break, but I'm going to introduce you to something that is working fantastic for me. I want you to check it out, and we will be right back, okay?
We want to welcome everybody to our online webinar this evening, guys, and it is absolutely packed. Thousands of people, guys, are now joining the Ultimate, a 3x8 forced million-dollar matrix. There has never been anything like this before. That's the reason why thousands of people are becoming a part of this Ultimate Matrix. You see, there's a key, the reason why this works so well. No other company is doing this. When someone joins you in the Matrix for only $79.98, this company is paying you an unheard-of commission of 100%. They're paying you $80. All of the money is coming to you up front. This is huge. See, everyone that you sign up by Saturday night midnight Central Standard Time, next week on Friday, they're depositing $80 into your account. But on top of that, you're going to receive an additional residual income month after month on 8 levels of this incredible matrix. Now, what makes this all work is that they've put together a system. You see, our system is so simple. You simply go out and share this with 3 people this week. You'll earn $240. Then teach them next week to go out and share it with 3 people they know. This video is going viral all over the net, appearing on thousands of sites everywhere, and everyone's making it a goal to share it with 3 people by the next week. So you know where your income potential is in 10 weeks. It is absolutely amazing what's happening. By the 8th week, you're over $10,000 a month. The 9th week, over $30,000. And the 10th week, over $98,000 in income potential. Guys, this is huge. The reason why it works is because we have the formula. We figured it out. We just simply teach people to share this video, and that's all they're doing. And everyone that you share the video with, you're going to get 100% check match of what they make in the matrix. And on top of that, on everyone that they refer, you get an additional 100% check match. Again, when I told you there's never been anything like this before, that's the reason why thousands of people are joining. The company that is behind this incredible compensation plan is called MCA, or Motor Club of America. Now, just a little bit about their benefits. We know that accidents happen to everyone. You know, 3.4 million people, you know, are in vehicle accidents. 3.9 million are injured at work. Well, what MCA provides you is a 24/7 accident coverage. You know, here's what's amazing. A person, perhaps, let's say, slips and falls at home. They go to the emergency room. Guys, guess what? On top of their insurance that they already have right now, this company will send them an additional $500 check when they have that emergency room visit. That's paid directly to them. For our covered accidents, if you're in a hospital, they're going to pay you $150 a day for every day that you're in a hospital, up to 365 consecutive days. And we know that every 12 minutes, someone dies in an automobile accident. Well, this company will not only provide your family with a $10,000 benefit to help with unexpected expenses, but they also have an additional $50,000 accidental death coverage. And you know what, guys? In those times, no one plans for those types of accidents, but they happen to people every single day. We also offer 60% discounts, guys, on prescription, vision, as well as 50% savings on dental work. Guys, this is huge. If you understand the power of this company, the services that they have are incredible. You also have unlimited roadside assistance with towing up to 100 miles. They offer a travel assistance reimbursement. You know, no matter where you are, when you look at the benefits of this company, it is incredible. They even have an additional $25,000 arrest bond certificate that, you know what, we never know when we're going to be charged with a moving violation. On top of that, they have reimbursed legal fees for you, legal services at a discount, and they also have an incredible credit card protection. Now, a lot of their services, guys, when you go and you take a look at them, you could spend hours on the site because the coverage is so extensive. Even getting you discounts at over 6,000 places to have your car repaired. When you look at our Platinum membership and all of the things that it includes, it is literally worth the money. That's why thousands of people are getting this membership. So it's very easy to join. It's $79.98 up front and then $39.99 a month. Now, here's the amazing thing. Every time you share this with someone, you earn $80. But on top of that, you're going to earn additional Matrix Rewards money. Now, in order to benefit from this, you have to be a member of the Matrix as well. So every time you share this with someone, you earn $80 per person. Guys, this is what's amazing, people, because 100% of that commission is paid to you up front, and you can share it with as many people as you want. They go out and they now start to share it with people. We consider that your second generation, and you receive another $6 advance commission. But the real money is generated in this long-term, what we call early retirement matrix. You see, when you sponsor someone or share this video with someone and they sign up for $79.98, every person you earn $80. So let's say you shared this with three people. Well, now you're going to receive an additional 100% check match on all three. In fact, if you just signed up one, you get 100% check match on what he makes in the matrix. Every person, you're going to receive that 100% check match. On top of that, here's the beauty of this program. You know, with just three people, with just literally sponsoring three people or having them get a membership, your income potential increases as your matrix grows, and you can earn up to $30,000 a month when they have their matrix completely filled, eight levels deep. Here's what everybody's excited about. You know, if you referred three, who went out and referred three, now because they have 100% check match on what we call your second generation, in other words, everyone that you refer, the people that they refer, you get another 100% check match. This is on people that you don't know, never met, probably never will meet, but every time they receive a matrix check, you receive a 100% check match. So here is what we're having people do. This is everybody's goal. Your first week, you go out and share this with three people, you've earned $240. The second week, have them go out and share this video with three people. The third week, they'll go out and share it with three people. The duplication process happens every week. By the time that you are at the seventh week, do you realize the people there are now sharing it with their three, and so now by the eighth week, your income potential now is up to $10,000 a month. This is residual income coming in month after month, whether you get out of debt at all or not. By the ninth week, with just everyone there sharing it with their three, your income potential is over $30,000 a month. And here's the amazing thing. By the 10th week, your income potential on those 12 check matches is over $98,000 a month. And how many people did you share the video with? Just three. Do you know what your income potential would be if you shared it with six or 10 or 20? We have some people in this company that have shared this video with over 100 people. And you know, we tell everybody, what if you don't have three within your first week? What if it took you a whole month? And it took them a whole month. You see, still the same equation is true. By the 10th month, you still could be over $98,000 in income potential. Now, here's what we want you to know, guys. It doesn't really matter if it takes 10 weeks, 10 months, or 10 years. The income potential is literally worth the wait. And, you know, here's the best part about it. While you're waiting for your matrix to build, you're protected. You have the accident coverage. You have the unlimited roadside assistance and all of their other services. And, you know, I talked to a gentleman the other day. He says, well, I don't know if I could share this with people because nobody wants to listen to me anymore. Well, guess what, guys? Even if you can't get three, two, or even one person who wants to join you in the Matrix, you can still earn Matrix reward dollars. That's the beauty of it. We've got people that are just customers that are getting checks every single month. Why? Because the 3x8 Matrix, without sponsoring anyone, without sharing this with anyone, you can still earn up to $7,572 per month. You see, bottom line, the reason why that happens is when you join the Matrix, you are falling on someone's first level. Once their level is filled, now they're starting to bring in people and they're falling underneath the people in their first level. That means you can have people falling underneath you. And as that Matrix starts to build, you can earn up to $7,572 when that Matrix is full. Of course, you at any time, if you share this with someone and they, of course, join, not only will you make the $80, but you're also going to get 100% check match off of what they're making on their Matrix. If you understand the power of this, you'll understand the reason why we have some people. You know, like we have one gentleman we talked to, you know, all he wanted to do is become a customer. He didn't want to sell to anyone, and that's great. He enjoyed his membership. His first month went by, no one was under him in the Matrix. The second month, no one fell underneath him in the Matrix. But that whole time, the people above him kept sharing this. By the third month, he was the next one in line to actually have someone fall underneath him. And the person that fell underneath him went out and started sharing this. And in just 6 weeks' time, that person sold over 50 memberships. That means they have over 50 check matches. But because now there's over 400 people under him, our dear customer that just wanted to be a customer, enjoy the benefit, well, he's still sitting on the couch, but his position has changed because now he's starting to benefit from the reward dollars. You see, it's a real simple concept, guys. If you refer three, you'd be getting paid on 12 check matches. If you referred six, who referred six? That's over 42 check matches. How about if you referred 10, who referred 10? Guys, that's over 110 check matches. You know, we tell people this. See, the benefit is that MCA offers different membership plans. In fact, over 100,000 people have joined MCA this year, even before the Matrix started. See, since the Matrix is brand new, the majority of the people were on a $19 a month plan, but they're not in the Matrix. They can't earn any income from the Matrix. They can't earn any matching bonuses off of people that are below them. That is the reason why thousands are spending just $20 more a month to upgrade into this incredible Platinum Matrix. See, the truth of the matter is every single day, hundreds of people all across the country are joining. You know, thousands have joined this incredible Platinum Matrix, and, you know, they have a simple system. Just share this with three people this week. Teach them to do the exact same thing. In fact, some people are sharing it with 20 and 30 people their first week. So they're way ahead of the game. You know, however you want to move, some people move faster, some people move slower. But bottom line, with this type of income potential and the benefits that we receive, it's definitely worth the wait. So get back in touch with the person that shared this video with you. Get your questions answered, but more importantly, get positioned in this $1 million Platinum Matrix today.
Dealing with the student loan is very, very interesting. And what these people are doing is they are totally ignoring the bankruptcy of 1933, the gold seizure, and House Joint Resolution 192. We have put together some packages for you to actually put them in a position where they have no choice. When the bell rang, they can't come out. In order to get access to this, go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Click on the Get Rid of the Student Loan Package. When you do, call me, Tahaka Montiel Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Dealing with these people is very, very interesting. It amazes me. I'm having fun right now with a mortgage company. Boy, this is exciting. They're good at sending stuff out to you, but when they get something from you, man, you ought to see what goes on. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Contact me, Tahaka Manael Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, if you have a problem with credit card companies, if you got a problem with a bank, if you have a problem with a small company, go over there to newfreehelpgroup.com and then call me, 904-303-9061.
Okay, Morris. Now, one thing I want to add while we're on the subject of dealing with Rome and dealing with your nationality, inside Tahaka's archives, this thing for the past 5 years, we have steady put everything in there imaginable as a tool for you to use to survive inside Rome. When it comes to dealing with the sheriff's department, everything that you need to know, all the documents that you need is right in there. If you need to look up a word, we have over $3,000-$4,000 worth of law books in there. We got the entire set of Black Law Dictionary. What I would like you to do, go over there to Amazon.com and click in Black Law Dictionary Volume 1 and look at the price tag on that book, one of them. Well, we got all of them in there. And when it comes to the actual documents that you need to fill in the blanks and get notarized, including power of attorney documents, a durable power of attorney document that you can use, all of this stuff is available in Tahaka's archives. So whatever it is that you're dealing with, what I would recommend you to do is go to newfreehelpgroup.com, study that page, look over that page real good, and then click on the link. You'll see the link there that says TahakaArchives.org. Go over there, access Tahaka's Archive Master Library. All of that information is available to you. Also, when you go to work and you start actually working on whatever problem that you have, you have access to me at area code 904-303-9061. And I ask that you will call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time so that if you're doing some document, before you send that document anywhere, send it to me through an email, and I'll open it up and look at it and make sure it's right. And then after we get it right, then we can go and run a copy off, fill it in the blanks, run a copy of it, take it to your notary, get it notarized, stamped, sealed, and send it to them, certified mail with return receipt. However, we're going to do that. But this is how we work that system there. So in my opinion, I think that this is excellent for people who are actually trying to do something. So you can sit out and talk about stuff all day long. We can get on these. You can come to Morris Talk Live 100 and dial into the broadcast and listen all night long. But if you got a problem, if you got a problem with a bank, if you have a problem with a mortgage company, if you have a problem with your student loan, if child support garnishing and wages, if you need to child family services or whatever it is, if you got a problem, somebody suing you. You want to exercise your freedom of rights to travel, whatever it is, I'm sure that the information that you need 9 times out of 10 is located right there at TahakaArchives.org, right over there. And once you get over there, we got your mortgage packages there, get rid of student loan package. We have the cancel off contracts for your little small minor problem that you have. And then we got Tahaka Master Archives that comes along with any of those packages, and then we go to work. Me and you. You ain't in this thing by yourself. Now, I wanted to mention that so that you will understand what's available, and because I had a brother call me yesterday. He said, man, this is unbelievable. He said, man, you're not really letting the people know what they're really trying to get. This thing is incredible, man. You need to do more about that. I said, well, do you have it? Oh, yeah, I got it. I said, well, just let me hold it. Take care, brother. So I decided to get out here and let you know what's in there. If you have children, Let your children start getting a correct understanding. If they need to know something about their ancient past, it's in there. If you need to know something about American history or the people that have shaped this country of African descent and their contribution, it's in there. Tons of videos are in there. If you need to know about contract law, it's in there in video format and audio format. You got whole audio shows. You got video clips that last hours that you can actually get in there and study because it is a library. It is a library for us. You can go into most libraries across the United States, the average brother of African descent, and walk in the library, there's nothing really in there of any value that he can use because it was not created for you. It was created for the people who are created it and to benefit them and their children. So we have something for us. Our story is in this library. Information that comes out to me from the Moorish American government is put in there. Access to signing up with the Moorish American government is there. My shows are there. You can go right in that library and click on Moorish Talk Live 100, and the widgets are right there, and listen to this broadcast right there in the library, right on your computer if you want to. If your child has a project in school and they need to know something about their history, they need to know something about science, they need to know something about metaphysics or what have you, the information is there and available to you. Go to TahakaArchives.org. Go to, better still, go to Moorish Talk Live 100. I'd rather for you to go there first so that you can see everything that's available to aid you and assist you in the problems that we're having. We have some problems of the people inside the United States. And so somebody has to do something to provide some type of vehicle to give some people some kind of relief. And that is why Tahaka Archives. Now, if anybody else have a question, we only have 3 minutes, so make sure it's brief. Go ahead and raise your hand, and I will open up the line so that you can get in. Now, I want to make the announcement that for those of you who are on Facebook, if you have Facebook, if you're there, send me a friend request. Tahaka Amana L. Bay, T-A-R-H-A-K-A, and Amana is spelled A-M-A-A-N-A. And then, of course, L-B-E-Y, E-L and B-E-Y. Send me that friend request. I'll grant that because they keep me blocked over there. I cannot send out any invitations to a broadcast. I cannot befriend anybody. And, I mean, they just have a real lockdown. I don't think they like me because I'm not being an average Negro. So send me that friend request. I'll grant that. We put a ton of new information of I'll put a battery of articles there, right there, and video, so that you can study that and read those articles. They're very, very informative articles. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we come down to the close of the broadcast, and y'all make sure y'all tune in again. We're going to do something else on contract law coming up. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And until next time, you all have a good evening, okay? Thank you.
you.